This is HPR episode 1675 entitled New Year Show Part 2 of 8. It is hosted by HPR volunteers and is about 193 minutes long. The summary is New Year Show Part 2 from 1400 to 1800.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
It is now recording two. The time is 14:09 UTC. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, Rich, I hadn't heard that you could actually get your motion camera to follow the motion on the camera as well. That sounds quite advanced. I've not seen any documentation on that at all.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen the checkboxes. I haven't seen a YouTube video on it actually working. Who knows? It may be a dormant feature. I don't know.
Yeah, I've never come across that. I haven't got a camera that can move, so I have seen people doing that, but that seems to be a bit tricky to set up as well, unless you have one of those of their specific cameras, you know.
Yeah, I've been wanting to set up the camera. I got the motion detection working correctly, and I wanted to throw a camera under the tiki hut. I have a hummingbird feeder out there that seems to be getting fed on, but I don't know by what, because I've never seen a hummingbird out there.
How do I sound now, guys? Am I too loud?
Sounds like you're too far away from the mic.
I thought you were in a different room. You got actually lower, I think.
I moved the mic in. How's that? I can go higher on the amplify. I had to go too high.
I would try amplifying yourself a bit if it doesn't distort.
You know how it is when you're on a cell phone and you have limited bandwidth and it just kind of compresses the audio? That's what you sound like.
Well, when we were playing things earlier, somebody was saying that maybe I had the bandwidth set too high. Let me try that, because I brought them back down to about the default level.
You sounded good just then.
Well, I put the amplification all the way up, you know, like 40x, which, you know, I would think I would be blowing you guys out.
No.
I mean, you sound quite tinny.
Yeah, and I need to throw some props to Door-to-Door Geek, because he recommended the microphone I'm using now. It's a Samsung. It does XLR and USB. Now, hold on, I'll get the model in a second.
Okay, now my quality settings are all the way up as well. Does that sound any better?
I think you still sound pretty much the same. I can't tell any difference.
Tell you what, since I'm recording on the Pi, let me just, turn the mumble off on my P and get on the phone. Everybody says that works better anyway.
Your phone?
Yeah, when you hear me online, I'm usually in Plumble.
Okay, because I've used Plumble, but that was on my S3, Galaxy S3, and it wasn't so good. I haven't tried it on the Note 4 yet. Okay, so the Door-to-Door Geek recommended setup is the Samsung, and that's Samson, and it's the Q2U. It comes with a mic. I think it has a USB cable, an XLR cable, a stand, and a headset, and the headset monitors direct off the mic. And the audio quality is real good. The only thing I did is I got a muff for it, a windscreen.
Yeah, it sounds pretty good. How much is that for?
Oh, gee, it was... I know it was under 50. It might have been like a $39 item. Let me look it up.
And it comes with a set of headphones as well.
Correct. Oh, and worse yet, after I ordered it and the lamp and butchered the lamp to make a mic boom, I found setups that were cheaper with a mic boom already set up and a mic holder.
Wow, if I didn't have a microphone already, some expensive one, then I'd definitely get that. That looks great and sounds good as well. $37, free ship.
Okay, you must have found something different. So this was $52. I'm looking at Amazon right now, but probably my Amazon receipt, that is. But I think you can find the whole setup cheaper. That's including the boom.
Oh, this is without the boom. But
Well, I used to have the Q2U as well, but it wasn't Samsung at the time. Did they buy the company?
Oh, I have no idea. Probably. That happens all the time.
Anyone here use graphics tablets at all or anything like that? You know, for drawing, with a pen?
Yeah, we know what you mean. I didn't say anything because I'm no artist, so no in my case.
If I used one, it'd look like stick figures.
Oh, me too. But for touching up and stuff like that, you know, pictures.
No, any photoshopping I've done, I've always done with a mouse or a trackpad. I know that I've seen, you know, companies I worked at where they had artists, and they use stuff like that.
I bought one. It hasn't arrived yet, but I bought a Wacom one. It was only about $100, and it's got touch as well, so you can pinch and zoom and rotate with one hand and draw and touch with the other one. And I hadn't realized, but, you know, if you vary the pressure, then you can get it to vary the thickness of lines and stuff. They really look pretty sophisticated and not that expensive.
Oh, very cool. And yeah, you're right. The Samsung Q2U, that's the mic and the headset, $37.99, along with the wires for $39.98. You can get everything and the windscreen. And I'm scanning down low. I know after I bought it, I saw that they had a boom that was pretty cheap too. Yeah, for the price, it can't be the audio quality out of this setup.
Yeah, it sounds perfect. I wish I'd listened to Dor, you know, 2 years ago. But maybe he wasn't recommending it then, I don't know.
I don't think he was recommending this at the time. And in New York, I have the Blue Yeti, and it's just a horrible piece of crap. I've got to have it turned all the way down. I have a sock over the top of it, doubled over, you know, tube sock. And I got to be right up on it, and it picks up a pin drop in the next room. It's really bad.
That's strange. You have to be right up on it, and yet it still picks up all the other stuff next door.
Yeah. Yeah. It's unbelievably sensitive, and that's really not what you want. And if you're new to audio, that's not what you want in a voice mic. You want the thing to be nearly deaf and that your lips have to be touching it when you talk.
And this Samsung one is?
Yeah. Yeah. It works really good. I know a couple of podcasts, my wife and daughter have been playing the flute in the other room. I have the doors closed on my office here, but yeah, you pretty much don't hear them.
Nice. That is really nice. And I mean, I can't believe the price. You know, you could, you know, there's no reason that you could buy a whole bunch of them and send them just when you do an interview with somebody, you know?
Sure. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And well, here's the other good thing about it is it's both USB and XLR. So if you want to move up to some sort of a mixing board in the future, and there's USB mixing boards, you can just do that. You don't have to get a new mic.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Or, you know, just plug it in and use Pulse Audio to redirect the mic somewhere or whatever. It's great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was going to be back in New York for a week, and I've been wanting to build a new computer. I was going to build a new Hackintosh, and it's just not in the financial cards right now. I do not have the money for that.
I thought rich by name, rich by nature.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Come on.
If you only knew the truth. I blew through a stink load of money just getting stuff for the house. And I mean, a king-size mattress is $2,000. That's just, you know, the mattress and the box spring, not the actual bed. Furniture, we had no furniture. We still don't have a couch or anything. We have, you know, I don't know, like a 27-inch TV or probably smaller. And from like 7 years ago. So we got this big family room and this, you know, TV you think you need a microscope for. So TV is way low on my list. But I would like to get a couch, and we haven't got one of those yet. Brand new furniture is horribly, horribly expensive and incredibly poor quality, and it all comes from the same place. It comes comes from some factory in China.
I've just been making some kind of cupboards and stuff from quality plywood and painting them, and it's kind of desks and stuff, because I refuse to buy the kind of pre-made IKEA furniture, which is way overpriced.
IKEA might be a step up from what I've seen.
Here in Czech, I have a feeling that, because I'm in the Czech Republic, and maybe when IKEA first came here, it was better quality, but maybe to keep prices down even for people here, that it seems to me that it's got worse, but I don't know.
Well, before we got the new place, we went around looking for furniture. We went to three different areas in West Palm Beach, three different shops, and basically the quality or the furniture was identical in all places, and there was no bargain. I would expect this stuff to be pretty cheap by the way it was constructed. And if they did dovetails, they did dovetail joints where you would see them, and they on the back, they just slotted everything. So it was really for the lowbrow furniture buyer to look at the furniture quality and say, oh, it's dovetail joint. Yes, where you saw it. I bet if they could get away with silk screening a dovetail joint on, they would.
Maybe they do somewhere, you know.
and then here's another level of quality issue. There's a lot of modular couches, and the people we bought the house from had this really nice big modular couch set, which I would have liked. But it does occupy a lot of space, and it diminishes the size of the room. But if the foam isn't a good quality in the couches you buy, that you might be throwing the couch out after 2 years.
I actually am planning to make my own couch. You have Murphy beds out there in the US, and I bought a little kit to make my own Murphy bed, and to have that coming down on top of a couch, so that when the Murphy bed's up, it's a couch. When it's down, it's a bed, you know?
Oh, very cool. See, we have one of the requirements, or, you know, I don't want to say requirement like that. I wanted a house with an office, you know, a nice master bedroom suite, and we have one daughter, so she has a bedroom, and I wanted two other bedrooms. And this way my wife has an office that she wants to set up with a Murphy bed, but with a desk and a Murphy bed, not a couch. And then we have a guest room, so if my dad stays with us for an extended period or I have other friends, we still have a normal sleeping arrangement. And the poor truth of the whole situation is, unfortunately, my wife doesn't sleep with me most of the time because I snore, so she'll go to another bedroom. And right now, I haven't finished painting the master bedroom just because we're using like five different colors, and I had somebody helping me, and they did a horrible job, and I got to do it all by myself.
Ah, that sucks. It's so funny, you know, everyone has different standards or different things they're used to, you know. We're trying to fix a lot of the stuff ourselves. It's cheaper, but then you get exactly what you want as well. But it takes a hell of a long time, you know. So we still have concrete floors downstairs. I haven't got around to putting the tiles down on the floors and things like that. But you kind of get used to it, you know.
I think people are different. I'd be okay living in a, you know, three-car garage with an outhouse, just knowing that I will be fixing it. But my wife is the opposite. She gets all flipped out that it's not perfect. And I'm surprised she agreed to have people over tonight. Even, you know, we're pretty much one step above camping here still. We got a bunch of boxes everywhere.
My experience is usually the wives, which are more fussy, you know. So sometimes I really don't like women. I've got a really good wife, or at least I'm more strong-willed than her and tell her how it's going to be, and she accepts it. But I feel sorry for a lot of guys who probably, like you said, they'd be happy with an outhouse and living in a double garage and having some kind of workshop next to their office, next to their bed, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's funny. One of the guys, he was from England, and he's living north of me now, north of Orlando, actually. And he built his plane in a studio apartment. And I told him he was full of it, and he sent me pictures. I couldn't believe it, because if you're doing fiberglass work, there's an incredible amount of dust that gets kicked up, and it's that fine dust that makes you itch for a week. And he said he did the work in a studio apartment, and whenever he was making dust, he had a vacuum next to him, and that's how he did it.
If you've got extraction, good extraction, you know, connected to the source, maybe really you can keep it down. I mean, on that subject, I have my workshop right now, because it's too cold outside, for cutting, you know, the large flat boards and stuff for kitchen lines and things like that. I've got that in my living room downstairs, right next to where we're eating and where our kitchen's going to be, just because it's more practical, you know.
Oh, very cool. All right, I'm going to ask a dumb question. Are we recording for the New Year's show?
Yes, it's about 4 o'clock this morning, Rich.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm like, when did midnight hit in England?
Sorry to jump in. I've been flashing my, trying to get in. Hey, it's Brome here. Good morning.
I thought you just had a twitch.
Yeah. Well, no, that's not a twitch. That's, it's kind of a, not necessarily a public standard, but it's like, hey, I'd like, sorry, it wasn't made clear.
Yeah, I actually didn't have the window open.
Yeah, I actually recently also moved into a house here, just north of the Mason-Dixon line, and I don't know where you've been shopping for furniture, but I will agree with you that it's extraordinarily expensive.
And low quality. All right, so I had bought, my wife went to a consignment store, and this set, oh my gosh, it is gorgeous, and I walked in. I looked at it. It's a round table. It's Italian lacquer. It's got leafs on it. You can put 8 chairs around it, and it did come with 8 chairs. But it was, I think with the 8 chairs, it was like $1,300. I looked at that and walked out because I'm thinking $500 is my top level for a table. I called a buddy of mine that makes furniture, and he says, that's what you'll pay for a good piece. He says, look around. You're going to get disgusted with what you see, and you're going to go back and buy it from that company, you know, from the consignment shop. Sure enough, I did. And I got the credenza with it, too, and a mirror. It was a beautiful set.
If you're going to buy it used or pick it up at an auction, an estate sale would be a good place to look, too, especially because it'll usually be older furniture.
Right. Right.
And if you don't like modern furniture, find somebody else who had an antique and is willing to sell it to you.
Yeah, I think that's what these people do is they go to estate sales, they pick the stuff up, and they bring it to their showroom. Yeah, and if I had the time to run around to estate sales, I probably could get half what I paid for it. But even still, I look at that stuff, and I just kind of drool every time I see it. I'm looking at it right now, and it's a really pretty piece. You know, of course, my desk in my office is the old dining room table from our old place because I don't have a desk yet. But heck, I'd be one of those guys. I'd have a sawhorse and you know, some 3/4-inch plywood across the top, and maybe if it got real fancy, I'd lay a piece of formica on top of it, not even glued on, just so it looked like something nice.
So how come the women are running our lives? If we'd all be happy like that, what's it about?
Oh,
seems like a bunch of men with no testicles, you know, bunch of ballless men.
Yeah, I think Brome's got a good point. Don't start into that right now.
Is he afraid someone's listening and he's going to get beaten over the head or something?
No, I'm afraid the Sony hackers are going to get me once I'm rich and famous.
I just don't share that belief. I mean, my wife is extremely demanding, but it's more of like she wants the best outcome, not that she's being fussy for fussy's sake. She's extraordinarily exacting, too, but when we actually get what she wants, it's great quality. It's not like she's doing it just to be contrary or something like that. So I don't see it as like, oh yeah, she's running my life. It's like, no, she wants the best outcome. And when I look at it, that's what I want.
So here's the funny thing about my wife. My wife grew up with money. She grew up in a family with money, and I did not. You know, not like we were poor, but you know, whatever we had was might have been from our grandfather. I had hand-me-downs, or my mother made my clothes. It didn't bother me any. I never thought anything of it. But my wife has no idea on quality. I understand quality, whether it's jewelry, and I don't know a whole lot about jewelry, or furniture and stuff like that. And my wife's like, oh, it's pretty, buy it. So I always got to tell her, you know, it's crap. Like we went to this in Palm Beach here on Christmas Day. Since everything is closed, all of the Jews go to a flea market because they're open on Christmas Day, and they go shopping or they go to the movies or eat Chinese. So that's the stereotypical what Jewish people do on a Christian holiday.
Good Jewish food.
So we went not on Christmas Day, but this was a few years back. We went to this flea market and she picked up this costume jewelry, and I mean, it's injection molded plastic junk. And I was kind of snubbing my nose and trying to tell her not to buy it. On the drive out, while we're in the car, we got a few blocks away, the stuff started breaking, and we brought it all back. So now she listens to me on that. But anyhow, I want to give you a couple. I did post on Google Plus. I don't know if you guys took a look. But on Amazon, again, I got these LED reels of lights, and they're actually outdoor weatherproof lights. and just a Walwart 12-volt transformer. And I put them above and below the cabinets, and then there's a wall that splits like the great room and the entryway sitting room, and it just really looks good. It's kind of a joke. I am in Palm Beach County, but the town is Jupiter Farms, and it's west of 95. But there's no lights out here. There's no traffic lights, street lights, anything. So it's unbelievably dark. And if you don't have night lights all over the house, it's worse than being in a dark room. So it really works nice. Either one of those, the cabinet lights or the arch lights, light up the whole living space at night, and it's really low power.
Yeah, I've got a whole bunch of those. I got them off eBay, and really cheap, like you say. And you can cut them to different lengths, you know, depending on how many lights you want to put on a place, and really great.
Yeah, it worked out really good. I was very shocked. I've been eyeing it for a long time for my house in New York because I redid the kitchen and I didn't put under cabinet lights in yet. And I wanted to put these up, and I figured this is a good excuse to do it. Also, the pool area is screened in, and I wanted to put them over the pool area because there wasn't a really sufficient lighting out by the pool. There's a few lights on the wall, like three lights, but it doesn't really illuminate the pool area so well.
You can get your Arduino or something like that and do some pulse width modulation and get them dim in and fancy stuff like that as well.
Yeah, you know, that's the other thing I was thinking about, and I'll tell you why. All right, so in the kitchen, there's granite countertops and a granite backsplash, and on the left was an outlet, and on the right was a telephone jack. And, you know, we have cordless phones, which we don't use for the most part, and everybody has a cell phone. So I don't need a phone jack in the kitchen. So I removed that, snaked a wire over from the outlet for power through a switch in, which is a double switch in a single space, ran the wires up to the attic, put an outlet up there that was split so I can control two different wall warts. I'm like, damn it. If I just tap power, if you asked me if I wanted to do all of that work again, the high voltage wire runs, or cut off one of my fingers, I'd have to stop and think about it because it was just such a pain in the ass. The thing that I was thinking about is just that, you know, when you use Google Now, it just works so darn good. If I could Google Now control my home and say, okay, Google, turn on cabinet lights or something of that effect, and just have, if it was just putting some sort of Wi-Fi adapter and, you know, control low voltage, you know, a couple of relays or SCRs, and have it in the crawl space and the rafters without running all the high voltage wire up and down and back, that would have been unbelievably easy.
I've actually got a project all set up. I've just got to find the time. I've got all the parts and planned it. But to have little low-power Wi-Fi, not Wi-Fi, but kind of wireless transmission from each light sockets, and then dimmer controls, and then to be controlled from anywhere, basically. Or my ideal was that as it gets later into the night, to actually start dimming the lights slowly to encourage people to go to bed early, you know, and so we don't get kept awake too late, and then to have that adjusted throughout the seasons, you know. And in the morning, maybe it'll be super bright. But it was a project. I kind of got it spec'd out, and I bought a whole load of stuff to test it. And I just haven't had the time to finish it, you know.
Yeah, that's always a problem. I mean, I did this LED lighting partly because it was fun and it's something I wanted to do. My wife really liked it. She suggested throwing lights on top of the cabinets, which worked out good. Now, a single strip on like 10 feet of cabinet underneath seemed to illuminate just fine. But I have cabinets to the left and the right of the oven, so there's a break in the illumination. And it seems a little dim, even though per linear foot, you still have the same amount of light. So I may double up the LED strips underneath those cabinets just to bring the light up a little.
I've actually got pretty used to just having an LED light on my head. You know, it sounds really primitive and a bit too poor, but I really quite like the mood lighting of not having everywhere lit up, and taking a more powerful light on the top of my head if I have to, or that could be moving around battery-powered spotlights and stuff. I know it probably doesn't sound very practical in the modern age, but...
Well, that's always something I joked about with my wife, because when you think about your lighting bill, she's very conscious of the electric bill. So most of the time we don't use AC, and most of the time we try to keep the lights off. Now, I'm not a fan of compact fluorescents because of a couple of things. One is they're horribly toxic. The other thing is, realistically, you need a period of about 15 minutes of them being on for them to be effective. If you turn a compact fluorescent on and off 3 times in 15 minutes, because it takes the amount of power it takes to start a compact fluorescent is equivalent to the time it takes to power it for 15 minutes. So if you're going to be back in the garage within 15 minutes, you might as well leave the light on. If you keep turning it on and off, you're actually going to use more power. So there's cases, you know, especially you may want incandescent bulb because you turn it on and off a lot, or because you want the heat from it. And the U.S., where they made laws outlawing incandescent bulbs and fluorescent bulbs, has just got to be because of lobbyists. It's just crazy. And LED technology is coming up very fast. They should have just sat on it and done nothing, and LED bulbs would be in.
Yeah, they don't make a lot of decisions that are sensible. With the European Union here in Europe as well, they banned them, but they're still for sale. And those tech toxic kind of mercury filled eco lights are a pile of crap. You know?
That's what I find very interesting. Is they always talk about like America is like neophytes, idiots, etc., and we should do like Europe does because the Europeans are so much smarter and advanced than we are.
Well, maybe you should look to see what the Europeans have been doing quietly. I think a lot of people here in Europe don't know what's happening in the European Union and what a pile of crap it is, you know.
So the LED bulbs and that, those are available here now. I mean, I've got LED bulbs in several fixtures here.
Oh, yeah. And actually, I like the light from it. We, in our old place, we threw a couple in the, it was a 3-story townhouse. So in the stairway from the first to second floor. And I really enjoyed the light.
I like those strips because you distribute the light kind of across the whole room a bit more evenly. It's not like one big intense sun, you know, it's more relaxing.
Well, and if you're using those strips, it's indirect light as opposed to direct light that you get from most, like the downward firing fixtures that you have up in the ceiling.
Right.
Yeah, but Josh, but you can put those strips like underneath a kitchen cabinet, and then you've got direct light at the place you need it. Whereas if it's up in the spotlight in the ceiling, most of the time you're shadowing it with your own body, aren't you? When you're on the outer edge of the kitchen.
Well, I had this conversation a little bit. In aviation, they use, and it's changing, but for a very long time, for position lights, landing lights, they use incandescent bulbs. And for the strobe lights, they actually use a Sirius strobe pack. And in experimental aviation, we've switched over to LED lights a while back. Easy, cheap, lighter weight, lower power draw. And actually, they're brighter. So we'll use a group, there's manufacturers, and they'll make wingtip lights with the strobe in it. Well, the strobe as an LED light is just a bunch of white LEDs, and it's stink bright. They're also doing LED landing lights. And the interesting thing, a buddy of mine did an experiment with this. He's like a great scientist that way, using scientific method to figure things out. Aviation lights or landing lights are very narrow beams. So everything else you want a light for, usually you want a wider beam. And basically, he tested a whole bunch of different products and came to the conclusion that an aviation light is, you know, a landing light is the best light for your aircraft.
An LED light is the best for aviation because it's a beam.
Well, yeah, they're actually making LED landing lights now. So you have basically the entire airplane can have LED lights for position, strobe, landing, and taxi.
Well, for my house, I was just going to make the lighting circuits 24 volt and then just have one central power supply, you know, instead of all these wall warts everywhere.
Right. I like that idea because the efficiency. It's interesting when you talk about it. The AC is less efficient because you have to have the potential energy there all the time, whereas DC, you could actually store in a battery and charge it as needed. Like if you have your 24 volt circuit, you could use a battery as like a capacitor and just push power into it as needed.
you got to be careful of the voltage drop if the cables are too small, you know, because that can catch you out. You know, on a 24-volt circuit, if you lose a few volts around, if it's long runs, then you're messed up.
Well, even with AC, but less so. And here's a funny story. There's I rented a hangar at this complex, and they built new hangars, and they really didn't know what they were doing. The dimensions of the hangars didn't fit most airplanes, so it was kind of a poor choice of sizing. Also, when they ran the electric, they ran one wire, and so if you're going for a longer electric run, you have to put a fatter wire in because you're going to lose power. They decided at the far end hangar, they're going to use it as a maintenance hangar and put an air compressor, etc. there. Well, to start the air compressor, they had turned all the lights off, and then they had enough power to spin up the air compressor.
I guess if they didn't turn them off, they'd turn off themselves, you know?
it just go, but you see some of these things, and you know, I don't want to cut on people. You can get away with a lot, but when you start doing larger things like that, you really need to know the calculations for the resistance over the length and, you know, be able to do things properly. Like in aviation, we have a lot of conversations about 12-volt systems versus 24-volt systems, and if you have a 24-volt electrical system, your wire can be half the diameter, but then you have a bigger battery. So people talk about the weight savings in the wire, but they really don't discuss the amount of weight they're adding into the battery.
Well, you don't necessarily have a bigger battery. The battery cells just have to make up 24 volt. You know, if you have a 100 amp hour 12 volt, it's equivalent of a 50 amp hour 24 volt. You know,
correct.
So you don't actually need more weight. You just have to comprise the cells differently.
Yeah. So there's all sorts of arguments about that going on, and then people doing calculations on the power runs that they need in airplanes based on length. So, you know, your lights going out to the wingtips, but if you switch to LED lights, you could use a frickin' strand of a ribbon cable. Don't anybody do that. That's wiring an airplane. I didn't do the calculations.
What kind of airplanes is this? This is small, like hobby airplanes. It doesn't strike me as something that you want to mess around with in a hobby in context, an airplane.
Well, the great thing about experimental aviation, you know, single engine aircraft, is that if you have an idea, you can do it. It's legal to do. Whereas if you have a Cessna, you have to put in an item that's been approved for Cessna by the FAA.
Right. You're talking about really the small airplanes, the really hobbyist ones, yeah.
Correct.
Is it easier to glide with those if you have failures? So I guess the risk is smaller.
You know, it really depends on the design of the aircraft and the glide ratio. In my particular airplane, the glide ratio is better than a Cessna, but unfortunately it's at a higher speed. So that's one of those critical things that if you lose power and have to glide somewhere, once you land, you have a lot more energy than you do if you have a Cessna. So there's a couple of situations where I've wanted desperately to have a Cessna and didn't. And, one of those is like instrument approaches. The Cessna is much more stable.
But you can't jump from one of these small planes. I mean, you're not going to better get clear of the wings, or
I don't know the type of plane that I fly. I don't know if anybody's ever jumped from one successfully. This is a horrible, horrible story. I don't know the details on it, but somebody from my home airport, Long Island, he had a front hinged canopy and apparently tried to eject from it. And the mechanism that he designed didn't get the canopy clear of the airplane. It impacted his skull and killed him.
Yeah, that really sounds terrible.
A bright guy. I mean, rock star programmer, brilliant guy, and a super nice person, too.
Just not such at the mechanics and the DIY.
Well, I think he was very enthusiastic about the project and not as cautious as he should have been. And I'm not talking ill of him. I'm just trying to be analytical. I mean, just really super nice guy. Not that he was a great friend or anything like that. And I say that not to bring myself into the picture. I've only met him a few times. I've emailed with him. But I just super nice guy. And it's horrible.
You can say he was optimistic and kind of ambitious, you know?
Yeah, and see that this happens in aviation a lot. He was advised by very knowledgeable people not to fly the plane, that you need to slow down and back.
Lost you, Flying Rich.
Do we lose audio?
I think Flying Rich lost.
Nope, sorry about that. Coming back.
Yeah, if you go for long periods of time without, like, resting or resetting your mumble connection, sometimes it gets a little flaky.
Okay, yeah, I usually try to drop off the key.
Yeah, guys, I'm still here. It's just that I am actually connected in with four devices. Since we couldn't get my level right with the headphones, I jumped off and jumped into Plumble. And I've got my Pi recording, though I'm going to have to check that recording because I've got Mumble open on it, and I don't see when anybody's talking, though I can see Rich in there, though, so, and he's only recently joined, so it's got to be somewhat current. I'm hoping it's still recording. It's overlapping with my earlier recording, and Ken came in earlier and said because my levels were so low, he can't hear me at all in the first part of the show. So I'm trying to, I've got my recording of it. I'm working on that right now. And actually, since I'm having this weird DNS connectivity problem on my laptop, I fired up the P4 and I'm running my schedule spreadsheet just on there so I can try to update, the notes for the conversation from there. But if somebody wants to open up either that page or open up K5 Tux's shared pad that, you know, and help keep up with the notes, that would let me concentrate on trying to get this first part of the show edited. And while I'm at it, I missed a greeting 20 minutes ago to Northland Territory, Australia, Darwin, Alice Springs, and Uluru.
Are they on halftime?
Yeah, we started out first 15 minutes into the show. We had a 15-minute one.
Really? I didn't know they went by quarter hour in places.
There are some really unusual time zones out there. I remember that from last year.
Mm-hmm.
You get surprised by some of them that are off on the 30-minute, 20-minute, 15-minute marks.
I think they're just trying to disrupt this conversation, you know, and get in on it.
Absolutely.
So, 50, how's the house build going?
Well, like I said, I'm trying to get some time away to work on this first 3 hours. But yeah, until it snowed here, they were making progress. I put up some pictures the other day.
And yeah, so you got the concrete poured.
Yeah, they got the floor poured, and what part of the plumbing had to go inside the floor is there. So I know probably until the snow melts, they're not going to be able to do any more to it.
All right, I got a question for you. The hot water pipes going under that they poured concrete around, do they insulate them first?
Well, I guess they're going the tracks. Now, we decided not to do the environmental heating because it was going to cost so much to do, you know, do the...
You're talking about radiant heat?
Well, yeah. Well, we didn't do the radiant heat because we decided we weren't going to... first, you know, apparently if you're trying to keep a certain temperature and the temperature's going up and down outside, you really, you know, you can't change heat very, very fast.
Correct.
Now, of course, if you've got a regular full-size heating and air conditioning system plus the in-floor heat, you could use that to fight it. But, you know, with my dad, how old he is, you know, he can't wait 3 hours for the house to warm up, or he couldn't have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we revised things for cost and all that along the way. We're, you know, I'm not doing things like I exactly wanted to, but I'm doing what we can afford from the insurance settlement. And, we were thinking doing the, well, it's environmental. It's where you get your heat from. You drill three wells and you run a tube down the well and a tube back up.
Oh, you're talking about a heat pump?
Well, kind of. Well, you can get a heat pump, but this is the type that you go through the ground to get.
This is called geothermal.
Thank you. And that was going to cost so much extra, and the contractor said, "Well, you know, you're building in the side of the hill anyway. You're not really going to see that much cost benefit unless you're willing to wait 20 years to catch up with it." So we decided not to do that, and we thought about maybe still going with the radiant heat in the floor. So if we ever did decide we could afford geothermal, we'd be set up for it. And then, I may regret this one day, but the only really way to do the geothermal out in the country was to heat it with propane. And either Dad or I were comfortable with gas in the house. We'd turned off the propane heaters, you know, disconnected them inside the house that we had because we weren't comfortable with it. Even though we'd electric, you know, meant going on electric heat and spending more. And really, it's no good for my lungs to have that propane going. I can definitely tell a difference.
Oh, wow.
When we weren't going to do that, then there wasn't any point in doing the ambient heat in the floor, especially like we said, with, you know, Dad needing, you know, it to be the right temperature now and not 6 hours from now, we were going to have to install a full-size heater and air conditioner anyway. So, no, but the piping in the floor, the way, I don't think it's insulated, but they, the way I understood it, they build a channel. So it's not like you just set plastic pipe in the floor and pour concrete around it, because eventually they say that's going to leak. So they've made it so if I ever have to get in and replace the pipe, you can pull it out one pull it out all through one end and get to it.
Oh, wow. You know, when I had my house in New York redone, which is like a 100-something-year-old house, my dad had insulation blown in it. I had a dual hydronic system put in. So the second and third floor are heated and air conditioned, and basically there's a radiator in the air conditioning duct. And same thing with the first floor, but it's a separate system. They pulled, I don't know what, it was a flexible hose to circulate the hot water from the boiler from basically the basement to the attic. And I'm wondering, is it PVC in your floor or is it some sort of, I think it's a vinyl hose. I'm not sure what it is.
No, it's definitely PVC.
And we had a little interesting routing trying to get it up. It went through the drop ceiling in the kitchen and went through a wall in a closet to get up into the attic. It took a little thinking to figure out how the route would be, but I figured it out.
And I guess I probably still have time to make a change. We had decided to go with no carpeting anywhere because when they had... Oh, it probably still wouldn't have been safe on a walker, but when Dad was in recovery, they got him up on a walker. Of course, they had to follow him with five nurses. And
He said,
you know, yeah, and I can't do that at home, or couldn't have. And, but he did say, well, I can't push this thing across a carpet, but I can push it across tile. So we decided to go with tile everywhere and just for, you know, cleaning stuff up and all that. But I may change my mind and go at least carpeting in the living room. Now, one thing we are going to do is the bathroom, at least the main bathroom, is going to have one of those electric heat mats in it, you know, where you can turn it on before you get in there in the shower in the morning and stuff. So
are you talking about under the tile?
Yeah, under the tile.
Okay, yeah, I got that in the upstairs bathroom in my house in New York, and it's set on a timer, and oh my gosh, it's the greatest thing in the world.
Well, I have a friend that was at his house, and I didn't really get a chance to really experience it, but he told me how much they enjoyed it. He said, you need to get this. I said, yeah, the contractor already told us that we're definitely going to get that, but... Yeah, I like, well, this house is all carpeted, this rental house, and, well, except for the kitchen and the bathroom, and, you know, I do like when I get home, kick my socks off, so we may see a bit, you know, I may change my mind about the living room.
My bathroom, actually pretty much both bathrooms in the house in New York are like as small as humanly possible because the house was built before indoor plumbing. And I forgot how much the radiant heat cost, but holy cow, it's so worth it. It is just the greatest thing in the world being able to go into the bathroom. You got a tile floor and not having cold feet. And as Peg Wallace told me, I have such horrible, horrible first world problems.
I think we missed that.
Yeah, I dropped off?
No, I think the joke flew right over my head.
Oh, yeah, well, that if my problem is I got to have warm feet, you know, on the tile, that's pretty low on the list of important things. So the other thing that when the bathroom was getting redone in the house, my friend was doing it, and they didn't want to put the vent and hot air blower, and I insisted on that because just like 5150 was saying, is the room doesn't heat up. You got to plan an hour in advance if you want a warm floor in the room, which is great for when you're getting ready for work at a regular interval. But if you're going to walk in there and it's cold, you're going to want the hot air blower to heat up the air at least, because then it's warm quick. And kind of the segue what I was getting into about the house in New York, not only was the house nicer, less drafty, because I did the double pane windows and the timer on the thermostats and the split zones. But every room in the house, every square foot of the house was heated and air conditioned, and very comfortably so, and I used 50% less fuel. So if you want encouragement to change your windows and maybe your heating system in your drafty old home, go for it. It's the best thing in the world.
Okay, we're coming up on another hour, so I want to say New Year's greetings to Japan, Tokyo, Seoul, which would be the Koreas, Pyongyang, and Dill. Okay, so we're starting to work our way into Asia.
Woohoo!
Hey, 50, I got to ask you a question. I'm totally jealous of your house build because you've got a gun vault being built into the house.
Yeah, well, it's going to be used for that. It's going to be, it was mainly, of course, for a tornado shelter for my dad. I mean, the old house had a basement. And, of course, he hasn't been able to go anywhere near going downstairs into a basement, you know, for, probably 7-8 years, or at least 5 years. You know, even before he had to get the power chair, you know, he was on a walker and there would have been no way. And of course, if he couldn't go down, I couldn't go down either. So, you know, this was intended for if we did have a tornado, we could, you know, get him rolled in there and ride the tornado out in this relatively small room. It's about the size of a smallish bathroom. You know, I'll probably throw a cot or something or an air mattress in there. So if I do have a tornado, I can just go in there and go to bed. I don't know. I don't see any ventilation. I asked the contractor. He said there'd be ventilation because I'd hate to go to sleep and, you know, run out of air and not know it or something. So I better. I better make sure there's something in there. I'm not sure it would be fire protection. Probably. If I had a fire again, I would be a lot better off running outside. But I'm also hoping, you know, I had a fire safe in the old house, or we did. And really, the only thing survived in the whole house was stuff that was in that fire safe.
Oh boy.
So, you know, I'm hoping it'll work for that. And like I said, you know, the hunting weapons, anything that's not actively being used for home defense. And here, you know, I just posted on the last half hour's show notes that we've had Flying Rich on here, and for 30 minutes we've managed not to talk about guns, and here we are. But yeah, in the old house, I didn't really have any of the guns locked up, so to speak, but probably any that you don't have positioned for home defense can just as well go in that locked room. And, you know, and I'm not sure on the strategy, you know, that I want to employ when I go in the new house. Do I want to have one gun in one place for home defense, or do I want to have multiple guns in multiple places? Because that means there would be places somebody else could get to them. So, you know, that is perhaps an interesting scenario. But the rest of them are going to go in that room.
Does it have climate control and things like that, or is it really just a big concrete vault that was meant to keep tornadoes from getting you?
It's really just a big concrete vault. And like I said, I don't see any holes in it except where the door is. So I'm going to have to ask him again about that. Say, hey, if I'm going to spend any time in that, I guess you could leave the door open till right before the tornado hit or something. But, you know, I would like a little more peace of mind than that. Maybe it's like a cardboard box. You know, they're going to punch holes for me afterwards.
Well, did they put the heating and ventilation system in yet?
No, none of that's in. See, what I had wanted to go with is instead of just poured concrete like we've got, you know, we'd originally planned to go with those, foam block that you pour the concrete in between.
Oh yeah, I've
seen that.
And that was out, and I wanted to do, you know, all four walls concrete and, you know, steel studs instead of wood, and, you know, everything where the house just couldn't possibly be destroyed. And, you know, and we got together, you know, with the contractor, and he started checking out prices, and he said, well, and I had to tell him ahead of time how much we had to spend, but he said, no, I need to know how much you got to spend, and said, no, we can't do all of it for that. So we've cranked stuff back considerably.
Yeah, I was joking about the new house. Basically, it's not prefab, but the walls were precast concrete trucked to the site and put up with cranes. Now, I'm the third owner of the house. It wasn't built to my spec, but I joke that the house is bulletproof. But we have pretty much just glass walls around the house, like an L section around a pool. So it's pretty much all glass out to the pool. So yeah, if they're coming from the north side or the west side, I'm okay, but forget the rest.
Well, yeah, we were going to have the big picture window looking out on the lake, and, you know, that's the only side I'm going to have visibility on. So I will be putting up some IP cameras or something around so I can at least see. But, yeah, if you got glass anywhere in the house, you might as well have a whole house of glass as far as security goes.
Yeah, and where we are, we're actually, the Jupiter police don't come out here. We're Jupiter Farms. We're an unincorporated section in the county. So the sheriff is the only law out here. And I stopped by, I saw a couple of the sheriffs. They have like a remote office. And I was talking with them yesterday, and I said, you know, I hear pop, 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 pop. You know, it sounds like somebody's, you know, popping off a shotgun nearby. It's like, yeah, you'll get that. I'm like, well, is it legal to shoot on your property? He's like, no, but nobody's going to stop you. So I thought it was funny because I'm like, if I can shoot on my property. But the law is actually you got to be 500 feet from a county road, and every road is a county road, and I do not have 500 feet.
We lose 50.
It looks like he's stopping and starting recording.
Well, that's on the pie. Did you hear my last? I said, your laws about being 500 feet from a road. You wouldn't be able to go hunting anywhere if that was a law in Kansas.
It's a law in Pennsylvania.
Which, I mean, I understand 500 is an arbitrary distance, but I mean, I can't throw a rock 500 feet, but certainly anything that comes out of a barrel of something I own will go further than 500 feet.
Well, see, that's the problem around here. I mean, most of my neighbors out in the country were, you know, anymore, we're very nervous about allowing anyone to hunt with a high-powered rifle, you know, especially if they're not from the country and don't know where the next house is.
Right, good point.
So most people, you know, if they're going to hunt a deer, they're going to have to hunt it with a bow or black powder, though. I don't know. Some of these guys shoot mini balls. Those things are higher muzzle velocity than a 30-06. I don't know if they'll go as far.
Probably not. They probably drop off pretty quick because the drag on a sphere is unbelievably high. But yeah,
they load those things with shaped bullets now.
Oh, do they? Yeah, I don't know anything about that. It's funny. The only larger caliber above, 223.556 I have is most Nagants, which, crap, they'll shoot through almost anything. But I don't know if you've looked at this. Is it combat walls? Or basically, they'll have mirrors or bookcases that you can conceal firearms in. Have you seen that for your site, for your new house?
No, I haven't seen that. I've seen the guy with the big headboard, you know, where he hits a button and a Remington shotgun drops down from above.
Well, I mean, if you're going to do something like that, I wanted to get into the topic of secret rooms, because we actually have a huge, like, little sitting area. And I say huge little because our master bedroom is extraordinarily large. And it's weird because we could easily wall it off and put, like, bookshelves in front of it and have, like a little secret room behind it. And I think that would be something that we're planning to do.
That. I've seen stuff on that. I kind of like the idea of having the armoire, and there's actually a room behind it.
I was thinking the master bedroom has his and her closets, and I was thinking about doing something in my closet with a hidden wall. You know, just behind a mirror, having a gun cabinet.
This is large enough. We could have like a reading room, treadmill. TV. It's a big space. I would say it's like a good 19 by 6 or so. And feet, meters would be about, what, 7, 8 meters by 2, or by 1, yeah, by 2. And it's got stairs going down to it, so we have this small staircase with a banister and a railing in our master bedroom. It makes no sense.
Oh, actually, I saw this when I was in Germany way back when. They had polarized stairs. So in other words, your stairs were split left and right, and each step was twice as high. And you had to go left, right in a particular order. But the stairs didn't go, they went half as deep as the normal stairs. So if the base of your stairs to the top stair, the horizontal travel was, 15 feet, it would now be 7.5 feet.
That would be pretty weird.
Yeah, it was some relative, and he was an architect, and I've always had that in the back of my mind. If I ever had a house with stairs, I could always do the polarized stairs in half the space.
But normally, I mean, there's regulations on what you have to have for the stair depth and that for any building.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, we got into that when back in one of the coffee shops I used to go to, they put in a small stage, and then they found out that the stairs that they had actually built for the stage were not to the city regulations or something, and they had to get a carpenter to come in and build a whole new set of stairs.
Oh my gosh. Well, that's like, I want to build a detached garage here, I have my man cave and maybe some storage on the second floor. There's all sorts of regulations, and apparently these scrubby-looking pines that are dying on my property are protected species, and if one of them gets cut down, that's some sort of violation. And not that I'm anti-environmental, but F you, I own this land.
You may have to settle for the man tiki hut.
Yeah, I got to get that re-roofed, because that's, I don't know if you can tell from the shots I've posted, but it's in bad shape. Which it would be nice if it was all, because we're having people over tonight, and we're going to have, s'mores and marshmallows at the fire pit, and if the tiki hut was set up, that'd be good, but it's not. Oh, this is the site. It's Tactical Walls. I'll post a in the Etherpad.
All right. Since it seems like we've picked certain topics that some are finding distasteful, anyone else want to bring something up?
Well, I was just making a joke in the notes, but
the only really funny joke I've heard, besides the fact that John Nato and I are probably going to do this a reprise of OLF, which is going to get really ugly, had to do with somebody posted on the FSF mailing list about how many GNU Linux users take a change light bulb. There was a lot of, like, it basically ended up being like a mailing list flame lore. I'll see if I can find it.
Wait, were you at OLF?
I was.
Right. So, were you hanging out drink with Jonathan and us?
I was.
All right, now I'm going to try to remember who you were.
This may be a while. I'm a memorable person.
I'll make it easier for you, Rich. He's the one with the really hot wife.
Oh, great. Here we go.
I hope I'm not embarrassing Briptastic by saying that.
She gets it a lot.
I don't remember anybody having a wife at OLF.
Okay, well, that's wrong, because my wife was there and with us.
Now, Rich, you're on Briptastic's bad list at this point.
She doesn't normally listen to these podcasts, but now I'm going to get her in Mumble just so
I was going to say, now this is not a good place to be.
Wait, there was only one girl in the room with us. What, Joni? That's it, Joni.
Is this 2014 OLF we're talking about?
Yeah. Trying to remember who else was there. All right, so was it bad taste me shooting the blind guy with darts all night?
Well, after Peter got the blind guy to film a video and started yelling at him to keep hold the camera straight, I don't think anything's in bad taste with Jonathan.
So you think Peter broke new ground, so I'm safe?
Well, the whole thing that was supposed to happen was that, imagine, like, you know those signs on a factory floor, like, so many days since an accident?
Yes.
We ended up having one where it was, like, so many minutes since the last blind joke was told.
Oof.
And then Jonathan turned it into the idea of a chess clock. So it was like, you tell a joke, you reset the clock.
Where did Jonathan actually go there?
So where is Jonathan? How come he's not on?
I corresponded with him. He plans to be on sometime today. He usually doesn't get in until later in the day.
He's a big adult with many important things to do.
Who are you talking about?
Jonathan.
Actually, the funnest thing about Jonathan is he is such a quick wit, and it's a little intimidating how quick he comes back.
Oh, we'll just wait for him to get here before we start talking about him. So, if you don't remember from OLF, what talks did you go to? Where did you show up?
Oh, crap, I'm not going to remember all that. I went to the one I gave.
Yeah, well, it's entirely possible we went to the same event and missed each other.
Well, yeah, I'm having a tough time remembering anyone other than Joni.
Hello.
Hey, Popey.
How you doing? Happy New Year and all that.
Happy New Year. Well, it isn't New Year for you yet.
Oh, hey, and I missed a 15-minute one. I'm sorry. Greetings to Western Australia, Australia, Eucla. And I want to repeat again that Bruce Patterson is looking for a new host for the DistroWatch Weekly podcast, so contact him. There should be contact information on the site if you're interested in that gig. That's a really good way to get into podcasting, because as I understand, the work's pretty much done for you. You just have to read the script. So, drop a line to Bruce if you're interested.
So what's new with you, Popey?
Oh, you know, working on an Ubuntu phone mostly.
Anything you can share with us?
Well, nothing that hasn't already been shared. That the first phones should be shipping beginning of February in the new year.
I really actually haven't heard too much about it. I was big in the phone hacking scene for a while, and I just kind of stepped out of it, mainly because with Qualcomm basically dominating the market, in my opinion, with all the new, because I think every LTE modem that comes out has Qualcomm on it. Getting free software on the phones at a driver level, which is something I'm very interested in, is just kind of not possible right now.
And that's the same for most of the handset manufacturers, whether it's Qualcomm or not. Unfortunately. I mean, we can, all of the bits that we make are free software, from the kernel upwards. the kernel itself obviously is Linux, but the drivers for things like the sensors and the GPU and, like you say, the LTE modem and stuff like that is in some way abstracted away in a binary blob provided by the device manufacturer or the SoC manufacturer. And there's pretty much nothing we can do about that if we want to compete. So, you know, we make free software from that point upwards.
Yeah. I did have one question. Is how is the modem connected to the application processors? Like a high-speed serial line or shared memory?
I think they interface over a serial connection. So you send them the old ye olde ATDT kind of commands to bring up a connection, that kind of stuff.
Okay. Yeah, that's at least good from a I don't trust my modem perspective. So that's good to hear.
Right, and the SoC vendors, they don't, the modem doesn't trust the SoC either, so it's mutual distrust.
That's good. Trying to ask if there's anything else I need to ask you about this phone. How can I get one?
So they'll be released and available to buy online beginning of February. The first market is in Spain. So a company called BQ are making them, and they'll sell them online via their website. So you can just order them online. I don't know whether they'll support all the frequencies in Northern America. I know they do all the GSM stuff that works in Europe and the rest of the planet, but might not support everything in the US. But there's another phone coming a little bit later, which is manufactured by a Chinese company called Meizu. And that's a kind of higher end phone with support for more frequencies.
Okay. Yeah. The funny thing is that, like, as soon as 3G and GSM and all that like started to get supplanted by LTE, the manufacturers came out with these pentaband modems that could be used anywhere or nearly anywhere.
Right.
And I have a sense that I'm dominating the phone, the conversation with phone hacking, so I'm going to defer and let somebody else talk.
Please do dominate. We've been having trouble with enough people participating. So talk as much as you want, Brome, please.
Phone hacking is preferable to certain other topics.
Fair enough. I mean, I was expecting somebody to come on and start talking about like game consoles or something, but I'll do phone hacking for a while. I mean, I really haven't followed Replicant too much, and I know that they've been having some trouble getting to the latest version of Android. I do know that they're evaluating. It's nothing official yet, but they're looking at possibly basing their ROM off of OmniROM rather than CyanogenMod.
Why are they not based off of AOSP?
I think it's mainly because AOSP was really nice for some things, but I remember Jean-Baptiste Carew, when he was back still in the Android scene, saying that it was there was something about the lines with due to certain video drivers and things like that. They were it was not possible to get an AOSP build to run on certain Nexus devices, and so I think they just started from CyanogenMod because it was popular. I don't know. I didn't really talk to Paul about that. Paul being Paul K, the main developer. Plus, I think also with more supported devices and more supported builds, if they can reverse engineer a couple things, then you can you have a larger install base. I do know that the Samsung phones are the ones that are mostly supported right now because of the Exynos processor. Like it's mostly the older Nexus phones. I think Galaxy Nexus is as far as they went because the LG Nexus 4 has so many proprietary drivers. If you print it out on a page, it would probably go on the next sheet of A4.
So interestingly, on their Wikipedia page for Replicant, there's a list of devices, and you know they all have, you know, big swathes of not supported, and you know, proprietary and so on. So this is going to be a problem for them for any device, really. There's so few devices that can work without any proprietary blobs in them.
Yeah, and that's something. And the other thing is they're focused on phones. I'm sure they could get a couple tablets to work pretty easy, but they really want a telephony device.
But which is surprising, really, because you know if you got a tablet and, you know, a fairly ubiquitous wireless connection, you could make the case for encrypted voice communication that didn't go over a GSM network.
Agreed. And I think it might just be that that's the way Paul wanted to take the project. If I had the time and more skills, I mean, my low-level programming is not very good, and my reverse engineering skills are terrible. I've been pigeonholed, you know, as a web junkie, and I have some application chops, and I know Java pretty well, but the stuff they're doing is so low-level, I'm not really able to contribute besides testing.
Yeah, it's beyond my capabilities too.
I would rather see a tablet just to say, hey, we got this to work, but they want to focus on telephony devices, so... And I think a lot of it is that most people agree that having these sorts of devices that you can trust or at least audit is, or have somebody audit, you know, you can pay them to audit, for example, is a good thing. But I think it's mostly still talk. Like, there's, what was it? A lot of the, wasn't it TrueCrypt that recently got audited?
And yeah.
It's still rare. Like, you have all these free software open source things that's like, oh, yeah, we can audit this. And then nobody does it.
Well, generally, you know, someone with significant skill and time needs to do that audit, and that often means, you know, really you need to pay for their time. And, you know, who's going to front up the thousands of dollars worth of time that it takes someone to fully audit and actually certify, you know, put their name to something to say that that is, you know, secure and open and so on.
Actually, I thought TrueCrypt was free as in beer, but not... not open, at least until they did the audit.
You are correct.
You know, it's more telling stuff like Heartbleed and I'm blanking on the Bash one, and there's been another one since.
Shellshock, which I find entertaining. That post-traumatic, an old slang word for post-traumatic stress disorder, decided to be a great name for a vulnerability.
Well, you got to be the first guy in the tech media to come up with the cool name.
Oh, agreed. I just find it entertaining. I didn't say it was bad. It was just like, oh, that's kind of amusingly interesting. But to get back to this audit thing, we've seen a lot of that in 2014, where we're seeing like, oh yeah, everybody uses this; it's ubiquitous. And then you look at it, and it's like, eh, it's not that great. What was it? Apparently, from what I've been told from my secure coding training that I have to do every year at my employer, there are no free software security toolkits that are released that do TLS 1.2, to my knowledge, at least in terms of like Netscape Security System and OpenSSL and things like that. I'm sure LibreSSL will do TLS 1.2 if it doesn't already, but I don't think he had materials on that yet. It's just that new.
And while we got you here, for those of us on the channel and in the audience who don't have the security training, please explain TLS to us.
Sure. Well, TLS is Transport Layer Security. It's basically the latest version of SSL. It just grew straight out of SSL. And so nobody uses SSL 2.0 or 3.0 anymore. There's the beast attack, the poodle attacks. SSL 2 is gone to hell. So everyone uses TLS. I think it's because the IETF took it over. And TLS 1.2 has been out for about, what, 10 years now? I think the standard came out in 2004. I know Microsoft, actually, their library is supposed to be very good and implements TLS 1.2. I don't know about GNU TLS. I know OpenSSL only supports 1.0. Netscape Security System, the NSS library, which is what Firefox uses, and its derivatives like IceWeasel, etc., etc. They're at 1.1, at least to my knowledge of this situation. So the idea is that there's this 10-year-old security standard that everyone's supposed to be using, and a lot of the free software toolkits don't support it, which is really frustrating. So not only do we have to audit these things, we may have to pay for development time. And it was that way with OpenSSL too, but I think part of it was the fact that they were begging for time and things like that, but they also weren't accepting patches. And there's Jonathan.
Sorry to break up the conversation.
Yeah, we're just talking about security stuff. I kind of got on my rant. It sort of, we organically flowed from phone hacking to now we're into audits and security, and we're talking about Heartbleed and Shellshock. So if you guys want to chime in, now's a good time.
Well, if Jonathan's going to be here, then I'm very happy.
Thanks.
Hey, Peggy.
Hey.
Hey, Peggy, your level's a bit low. You might be able to come up a bit.
Yeah, while there's a lull, you know, and we were talking about the security audits. I think the first one of these, at least I ever heard of, a couple years ago, where the guy claimed that the NSA had paid him to put a backdoor in BSD, and everybody scrambled for the next 48 hours to say reasonably sure that it wasn't a true story. And the other thing, while you're on here, Jonathan, I had invited Mike Ray and Trenton Matthews on the show from the newsletter, because they're both blind users and had complained that the eSpeak voice that we have on there that and that announces the show summary and the length and all that, so people can decide if they want to listen to the show or skip. They found at least that voice annoying, or at least Trenton did. And so about a month ago when that was going on, I had to play a little bit with text-to-speech. And, you know, what I ran into, you guys who use them all the time probably don't even notice, but my experience with text-to-speech was that, I found the default eSpeak British English voice, a male voice, far easier to understand than any of the add-on voices. The add-on voices certainly sounded more natural, but they were harder for me to grip. So, or got was it that's rock.
I guess. Rock.
So, you know, I kind of want to bring that, but first, what I want to talk about, I mean, you're always in Mumble, so we don't think about it, but when I invited both of them, they said, well, Mumble's a QT application and is incredibly inaccessible. In other words, I don't think they're going to be here because I typed them up some instructions because I've never even looked at it. Our how-to Mumble PDF document is incredibly visual. You know, there's like half a dozen screenshots of dialogue windows and about 20 words of text in the whole thing. So it's not very, it isn't very accessibility friendly at all. So I tried to type them up something, but they said, well, you know, still without being able to, to hear anything when they're navigating Mumble, it's not much good to them.
Yeah, so, QT normally is not very accessible, or generally speaking, but Mumble surprisingly is extremely accessible. Don't ask me why, but I can totally get a new installation, install Mumble, and I can set up any server. I can access everything I need to within Mumble, so it's surprisingly very accessible.
That's strange. I wonder what the problem is, because I've been corresponding with Mike and he installed Mumble and said, well, I can't do a thing with it because nothing speaks to me.
Yeah, it's not intuitive, but it is accessible. Like you need to press Alt S to kind of get to the settings where all the stuff is to add the server, and I can get to every sort of option right from there just by pressing Alt S. It's not intuitive because right away, if you open Mumble, like nothing talks. You push the arrow keys around, you hit the tab key, nothing's happening. But if you press Alt S, that brings up the menu and you can get to everything that way. And then you can start to navigate through Mumble. So it's not obvious how to do it, but it is extremely accessible if you do know how to use it. The only thing that isn't really accessible is when you guys are chatting. I can't really get to that chat box and message someone or go back to a chat box and click on a link. That's the only thing that isn't accessible, but to use it the way I am right now, totally accessible.
Well, that's what I mentioned to him. I knew that part was not accessible. Anytime you showed up on the server, somebody has to drag you into the right channel.
Even that part's accessible now.
Cute.
Yeah, well, I can hear you still, Sound Chaser.
Yeah, he just can't talk back.
Well, you are not back in the open chat. So just so people know, I typed in the text box, and since Jonathan was saying he couldn't get to it, I typed in there and said, "Oh, goody, if I need to hide from Jonathan, I know where to go now."
Hey, Sound Chaser, not to harp on levels too much, but you're overamping a teens.
Oh, that figures. It's probably pulse messing up. I'll adjust it.
Well, I think you're not bad. Got excited and laughing like that. Yeah, it did bleed some.
Yeah, it was just when you laughed that it peaked out, but normally talking, it's fine.
Okay, no one be funny.
How's that?
Sounds good.
So how you been, Jonathan? I haven't spoken to you since OLF.
Yeah, pretty good. You know, just laying low. Some people may or may not have noticed, but there's not going to be a Northeast Linux Fest again under my watch. I let that domain go, and I realized...
We lost Jonathan.
Am I back now?
You are.
Okay. So, yeah, so I just realized, you know, trying to do too much stuff, I basically don't get much done of anything. So now I'm just trying to strictly focus on Sonar and really, you know, get that to be what I want it to be. So no more Northeast Linux Fest.
Yeah, I found that one unusual when we talked or corresponded the other day, Jonathan. I mean, you didn't start NELF the first year, did you? You became more involved like the second year. So, you know, you just don't have any help up there with it? Because I thought there were plenty of people who, you know, always talked about, yeah, NELF's the best show. That's the one we want to go to.
Yeah, no, I was the one that started it. And, you know, I did get a lot of help. But the last year or two... it just, you know, we had kind of less and less help, and, I just ended up doing, me and Bruce Patterson ended up doing a lot of the work, and it just got to be too much, and it's too hard to pull off, you know, an event with two people, three people, four people. A lot of people would help out on the day of the event, but leading up to it, it was, you know, one or two, three people doing stuff, and it just took a lot of work and a lot of time, and, you know, I just... started sitting back and thinking, you know what, all this time I put in a NELF, I could have put in a Sonar. And so I'm just trying to peel everything, you know, strip everything down and focus solely on Sonar now.
Well, it's like anything else. If you want a thing, if you want to have something come off, you got to be willing to put the work in. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about all those other folks who enjoyed NELF and always talked about how great it was and then weren't there, you know, to keep it going.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's still plenty of other stuff going on. There's always Libre Planet, too, in Boston, so it's not like there's not going to be any other, you know, conferences in the area. So there's still that, and there's all kinds of other conferences everywhere else. I'm pretty sure, you know, NELF won't really be missed too badly.
Yeah, I will say that, like, especially having them so close to each other in time, it was really... It was like, I have to pick one, especially when it ended up being like a, it was a flight for me. I'm sure other people, it wasn't so bad, but having to go to two conferences in the same area in 2 weeks was a bit much, especially when they're personal conferences for me.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and also with the other, you know, the other Linux Fest, it's like, okay, well, you know, Self is kind of around the June, May time and, you know, Ohio, September, October. So you try not really... try not to step in any toes and spread it out, and it's kind of hard now. So that's why I was like, you know, there's so many other conferences going on. I don't think, you know, NELF won't be terribly missed. So that's why I just figured I'd let the domain expire and carry on. What, Ken's not around? What, is he skipping out this year?
Must be.
Oh, boy.
No, Ken had to work today.
I was going to jump in, Jonathan, and say that unfortunately you had gotten here just after I had explained the chess clock metaphor.
Oh!
So they have all been initiated.
Okay, good. So everyone's in on it now.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you if you brought your chess clock with you.
Oh, no, we keep an internal chess clock.
We just know we're good like that. Oh, no, I'm not going to break hearts before you do, though. I will say that.
No, why is that?
I don't know. I just don't think it's fair. I mean, you know, you and I, you know, I said I would get pretty bawdy if I needed to. I mean, not like we're going to have to cut this out, but I don't know how tasteless we want to get on this because we're being recorded.
Well, Usually because people tend to get snuckered towards evening wherever they are. I do want to remind people, we always flag the New Year's Eve show as not safe for work. So I say go for it. Go go Cards Against Humanity raunchy.
Oh, I wasn't going to go that raunchy. You have to be careful playing that game with me, see, because when we have tragedy in our lives, we make commemorative cards as a way to deal with our negative emotions on it.
Ooh, ouch.
So you got to be careful with that around me. That means to take it much, much farther than other people do.
Hey, so I just checked, and if you decide that the internal clock's not good enough, there is actually a package, at least in Debian, called Game Clock, which actually has all the different types of clock setups for chess, for like speed chess and Fischer chess and other different chess games.
All I can say is it a QT application? Time.
The clock has been started.
Okay, you know how I said I wasn't going to break hearts? I couldn't resist.
Exactly. That okay. Didn't last too long.
Okay, Python GTK, so meh.
Oh well, at least I got the good joke off. But it's nice to see that it's accessible. I'm going to step away from the keyboard for a second. I need some breakfast.
Oh, and so 5150, back to you kind of talking about the eSpeak voice or whatever. I'm assuming Mike and Trenton were kind of saying they didn't like the sound of it. Unfortunately, there's not really any good solutions yet for, you know, free software kind of speech synthesizers. There is OpenMERI TTS, which I still think that's kind of the best solution, sort of the best solution right now. And it works, you know, the only sort of downfall, I guess, is it's Java-based, so, you know, it works off Java. But for me, I'll sacrifice quality of voice for speed and response. And eSpeak is just so downright fast. I mean, I listen to it at 300 words a minute. So, you know, I'm working on getting that to talk even faster. But, you know, with the better sounding voices, yeah, they sound better. But when you start cranking them up at 300 words a minute, they start to break up and distort and crackle, and they no longer sound good anyways, and they don't perform well when you speed them up. So I'll take performance and speed over quality of voice any day of the week. The OpenMERI TTS voices do sound pretty good when they're sped up. They do still kind of lose a little bit of performance when you start cranking them up, but so far though, I think that's kind of the best solution we have right now, and I'm still working on implementing, trying to use MERI TTS with Orca. So,
yeah, I said I'd done a little playing around, and I was gonna, you know, thought we'd talk to people some about how to get them installed and et cetera, because a lot of people probably have never messed with the text to speech packages, and I thought of it as you know, in regards to now. Amazon's come up with the stupid Amazon Echo, which is, they should probably call it, NSA microphone in your living room. But I was thinking, surely there's probably a way to do something a lot cheaper with a Raspberry Pi or, you know, even better single board computer. But, you know, right now I'm trying to concentrate on about three things. So if I drop out in the conversation, it's because I'm trying to go on IRC. I'm still trying to, my first 3 hours edited because, you know, I apparently was way low, and Ken can't hear me hardly in his version. So I'm trying to see if I can't, you know, at least give him the option if he wants to use my edited version where I'm still low, but at least I'm audible. And I've been talking since 4 o'clock this morning, and I'm trying to do about 6 things all at once now. So I hope we can get more than 2 people talking in the channel and keep things going.
Looks like no. It'd be best if I put my microphone like actually in a place where it actually can pick up my voice. I'm back.
That was pretty good, actually. It was like the voice in the back of the room, like, you know, like, no, I guess your brain is saying, nope, no one's going to talk. I'm
back with Paul. Sorry, 50.
You're still really low, Pegwall.
Pegwall is just very low by his very nature.
Boom, boom.
Dude. Time.
Ouch! I was going to say, you know, if you want to get Pigwell to raise his levels a bit, we can just tell him that we're going to invite him out for Greek food.
How about no?
Like Pigwell, have you got something like wrapped around your face or something? Cause it sounds like you're like completely muffled.
Yeah, you're like mummified or something.
He's going to reboot, so we'll give him some time.
Time? What?
No. So how is Sonar Linux coming, Jonathan? And ask the obvious question.
Well, actually, a few months ago, we put out our first version based off of Manjaro, which is based off of Arch. And then hopefully the next couple of days, we could have another release out with GNOME 3.14. So it's going pretty well. Once we get this next version out, we're going to start working on, you know, tweaking some more things within Sonar. We're working on some voice to text recognition software and hopefully working on getting some, you know, better quality sounding voices within Sonar. I don't know if anyone else on here uses GNOME or not, but as of GNOME 3.14, I'm officially a fan again of GNOME. It is very fast, it performs great. And I've finally come around to, you know, their thoughts of how they wanted the desktop to work and function. So once you kind of grasp the concept of how they intended you to use it, it does actually come quite usable.
Oh, okay. Does it still require 3D acceleration?
Unfortunately, yes.
Which is rather entertaining considering how you use it.
Yes, it is. That's the one downfall and the one harp that I do still have on it. It's kind of ridiculous, you know, as a blind person to require 3D acceleration, but, there's not much that can be done about it. The Mate desktop is coming along really well. Me and a few of the guys on the Sonar team have been working with the actual Mate developer, who's actually the lead developer of Ubuntu Mate, and he's done a ton of stuff for us to make sure that Mate has become really accessible. I would say right now, Mate is about as accessible as, you know, GNOME 2 was before they killed it off. So he's done a lot of work, and it's really appreciated.
Yeah, that's been a really frustrating point with, like, especially a lot of those fully free distributions, you know, that rip everything out that's even remotely proprietary, like Triskel. And so, like, yeah, you can get, I think they were using Debian's GNOME 3 fallback for a while, and it's like, great, you know. The only you have to have like a specific kind of computer, and even then it's not perfect because you still have like the Intel management firmware. But like you're using Intel drivers, and that's it. Like if you really want like something that's fully free and accessible, and I don't really like that kind of trade off that you'd have to make.
Yeah, it's tough to be like, hey, yeah, we have this fully free, you know, operating system, and it's accessible, it's great, but you can use it on these three computers.
You sure one of them's not a Mac?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so, and also the Ubuntu Mate developer, I keep forgetting his name. His name's Martin, I think. He also made sure that Ubuntu Mate was extremely accessible, too. Like, so he took a lot of notes from Sonar, and he just said that, you know, he wanted to make sure Ubuntu Mate was as accessible as possible also. So we appreciated him taking those extra steps also.
Good. Glad to hear it.
All right, folks. Here's the question of the day. Is a Raspberry Pi good enough for Mumble?
If you're using the Pi right now, voice is coming in, but it sounds like you're a little bit underwater.
It also sounds like he's being recorded back on a cassette player or something.
Well, I am using it now. It was sort of the project for the day to see if it would work. I've messed with the latency and to listen is fine, but it doesn't look like the talking part is up to snuff yet. Maybe I can try and find something else to remove to free up some more clock cycles.
Do you have it overclocked?
Sorry, that was my fault. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Do you have it overclocked?
Yes, I do.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wait. No, I don't. This is Arch. I haven't overclocked it.
I bet you if you get it up to the 1 gigahertz spot, it might help you out.
Cool. I'll try that. You know, I've been working on this minimalistic computing, and it's fun.
I was going to say, it does kind of sound like you're talking through a pie, and I don't mean like talking on the computer. I mean like you actually have a baked good shoved up to your mouth.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm going to jump off and reset some overclocking and see what happens.
Well, that makes me feel better because my recording, at least for what it's worth, is running on a Pi, but I'm running Raspbian and I do have it overclocked to the max. So if that's the key, then hopefully I'm not getting horrible choppy audio. But let's all keep our fingers crossed on that. I was recording on the laptop, but I'm having real. I tried to switch to Google DNS and I had to switch back, and it's introduced some really strange DNS connectivity issues. I mean, it just falls. The laptop falls off DNS every couple hours, and the only way to get it back is to do up down on the Ethernet jack. So that means I can't reliably record on the laptop. So I hope everybody else's recordings are going well.
Take a breather for a second. Do you believe it's a new year somewhere?
I really have to turn off that text-to-speech. All you guys messing with your settings is causing me to miss conversation pieces.
Are you missing me talking?
Well,
that'd
I don't
be
know.
It. Yep.
Well, I don't know about missing, but he didn't hear you.
Yeah, I've got the schedule here, so if I'm not off someplace, greetings to China and 12. But we need to replace that 12 more stuff with actual places. Beijing, Hong Kong, Manila, and Singapore.
Ni hao.
Oh, that was you, Cobra 2. See, I couldn't even tell who it was. All I could tell was that somebody was talking.
Well, can you hear me right now?
Yeah, you sound deeper, like you're talking through sodium hexafluoride or something, so I didn't actually recognize your voice. Or maybe it's just the fact that when we usually talk on the phone, it cuts out so much bass that I didn't actually recognize you.
No, this would be just rolling out of bed voice.
Ah, the hungover voice.
No, just the not much sleep and not looking forward to staying up all night again.
Well, you can take naps. The other option, you know, I was expecting you to have more of a Canadian accent by this point.
Oh, hell no.
Yeah, eh?
Beauty.
I actually just hopped on because I just woke up and it just happened to be a perfect time to break the recording for a new year. And I just wanted to say that I'll be back by in a couple hours. I got to go buy a USB headset and drop off some stuff at my in-laws because they're heading down to the country today.
Yeah, you guys are going to force Ghost Reaper to jump on here and remind us that that whole Bob and Doug McKenzie accent thing is only the far western part of Canada, as I understand it from him.
Or the far eastern, but, you know, I was hoping to hear a couple more of boots out of his mouth before he left for the store.
I'm still here. I haven't run out yet.
There's still time.
What you talking about?
Go ahead, Sound Chaser.
I was gonna say that wasn't right. You said about instead of a boot.
No, I'm just gonna be headed out in a boot today.
You going out for a rip?
I hate that thing.
Gotcha. Well, if you just woke up, you've missed some stuff. I mean, we've been talking about like free phones and free firmware. You missed that discussion, and then Jonathan and I have been explaining the how exactly we're going to be terrible people today. You missed that. And there was the mandatory firearms discussion about an hour ago. And we got that out of our system. So, floor's open, man.
It looks like I could get a firearms permit.
You're frickin' blind.
Yeah, but I can get one. I've done some homework on it.
Well, it is your freedom to.
Watch out, people.
Are you able to get a handgun?
I don't know, I haven't even gotten to that yet, but I just started checking into it like a few months ago, because I was like, you know, can blind people get permits? I never, you know, never really thought about it. So I started calling around, and it looks like, I guess it varies from state to state. Brom, you could jump in on this, you probably know way more than I do, but it looks like in Massachusetts, I just have to go to like the local police station, you kind of have a 4-hour class you have to kind of sit in on, and once you do that, I guess you just kind of have a, it's not an interview, but you have a discussion with the chief of police, I guess, and once you do that, good to go. And then, well, then you got,
you're,
Then you got to pay the couple hundred bucks or whatever for the license.
Yeah, you're in Massachusetts, though, so no handguns for you, sir.
Okay. I guess it's just AK-47s for me.
I don't even know if they allow those in Mass. They're pretty tight on their gun laws.
Yeah, but Cobra 2, I can be like, what? This is an AK-47? I thought this was an Uzi.
We'll just hand him a flare gun and tell him it's a Desert Eagle 5.0.
Time.
Damn it, I got caught.
Oh, but oh. I do have to run to the store. I gotta buy a new USB headset because mine is packed in some box that's not labeled office.
I thought it'd be in a box labeled bomb or something.
Would you know the difference? Time.
I'm missing the time thing.
Alright, fine. It'll be quick. Imagine there is a sign on the wall that says number of minutes since a blind joke. Every time we say time, it resets to zero.
Just so you know, the first part of the show notes for this segment is going to read Guns for the Blind. Time.
Oh, perfect. That'll piss off almost everybody.
Pegwall has guns. He's so blind he can't drive, but he can still see.
Well, he can take a better photograph than I can, so maybe he can probably shoot better as well. It wouldn't take much.
Ask Peter 64.
We should give Jonathan a camera and see how good he is. See if he can show Pegwell up.
Didn't they already hand you a video camera at OLF, Jonathan?
At Self, when Peter 64 was here, No, we can't, Pegwell. At Self, Peter 64 gave me his camera, and he's like, hey, take some pictures of me. But he set his camera to record his video. And so he's yelling at me. He's like, come on, Jonathan, you're not even aiming the camera at me. And I'm like laughing so hard because it was just so funny. He was like laying into me. And so he recorded the whole thing on video when I was holding the camera. I thought I was taking pictures, but he actually set it to record the video. So the whole time I'm holding it, I'm like, I'm pushing the button. I don't think it's doing anything.
Oh, good job. But seriously, I'm running out. See y'all probably in about an hour, and then I'll be here to stay.
Okay. Hey, John, welcome back. How's your sound?
Well, let's see. Do I sound any better now?
I'd say it's about the same, maybe slightly better.
Yeah, it is slightly better.
Okay, well, that's at turbo, and it, you know, if it isn't usable, it isn't usable. But I'm quite impressed with the Raspberry Pi for $40.
Has anyone taken the Banana Pi for a ride at all? Has anyone gotten one of those? Guess that's a no.
Yeah, I've mostly stayed away from the little embedded systems. I've got some relatives evaluating the BeagleBone Black and stuff like that, and it's just like, I don't know. There's whichever one you pick, it's going to be basically an ARM processor with a bunch of stuff on it, and it's just sort of like, you know, do you want a bunch of different peripherals? Do you want, you know, something built into the board? And I've just kind of dead back. I don't really know if I need it for anything.
Yeah, there's one cool, I think 5150 has a version of this one. I saw one, like, it's called the Odroid X2, and that one actually has a quad-core Exynos processor with 2 gigs of RAM in it.
Well, actually, the equivalent would be the U3 now. They have a $35 B1, which is quad-core processor, quad-core GPU. Same form factor and almost 40-pin compatible with the Pi. So if you're looking at a Pi, you may want to go to hardkernel.com and go scroll to the bottom of the page and see if you'd be interested. Otherwise, they've got the U3, which has got 2 gig of RAM. C1's only got 1 gig. Also quad-core CPU, GPU. And then they've got the UX3, which has that octa-core processor, but it's the one where you usually use either the 4 slow cores or the 4 fast cores, and it's like $100. Well, I think it's more than that. It's quite a bit more, but I think the American carrier has like a UX3 Lite, which is only $100, and I'm not sure really what the difference is between them. I think there's a site like a Ameridroid that has that. But the UX3 from Hardkernel is quite a bit more expensive. And the Linux kernel, they did right after the phones came out that had that dual quad core processor. They did modify the Linux kernel to allow use of all 8 cores at once, because originally it was either the 4 slow or the 4 fast, but not all of them. So I assume now that UX3, you can run all 8 cores and a four core GPU and 2 gig of RAM. Did I stop conversation or have I dropped off? Oh shoot, we missed the last hour, didn't we?
Well, that too.
Greetings to Indonesia. I'm supposed to be one doing it. Greetings to Indonesia, Thailand, and 7 more, Jakarta, Bangkok, Hanoi, and Phnom Penh.
If only I knew how to speak any of their languages.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, at least enough to say, like, hello or Happy New Year or something to them.
We've lost Michael again.
And somebody remind me, we've got another one at the 30-minute mark. Did we ever have Pegwall?
I don't know. I guess it's kind of like a disease.
Time.
No, that's not a blind joke.
Hey, Sound Chaser, I think you said a little while ago, you said you were on Kernel Panic. You were kind of in the market for a new laptop. Did you ever get one?
I have not gotten one. I don't know if I want to get a new laptop or I just want to grab like an SSD and put it into the laptop I've got. I'm kind of torn between being thrifty and getting something new and sleek.
The SSD will make all the difference in the world. Once I start using those things, there's no turning back. I have an SSD and a Core 2 Duo notebook right now, and the thing is blazing fast.
Yeah, the thing is, this is an older laptop, and it's bigger and bulkier. And so that's where the consideration has come in, is getting something that's nice, light, easier to carry about as well, or just being thrifty.
I see. Time.
That you do. Well, I mean, I can tell you that my wife was using it was a 1.8. I don't even know if it was a P4. It was one of the earlier cores. It was a ThinkPad T61, if someone wants to go poke at that. It was pretty old. And she decided, after talking to a lot of the laptop vendors at OLF, that she was going to grab the Think Penguin Snapes, or Snares, I think it's called. I don't really know why, and I'm sure all of you will, that she decided that she wanted to put a Core i7 into it and had 16 gigs of RAM, but she did. And then she asked to install LXDE on it.
Oh, snap.
Hey, you got to keep all those raw resources available for anything you could need them for.
Exactly. I switched her to KDE yesterday, mainly because LXDE was starting to have really nasty problems, as SoundChaser can probably rant about here for the next 5 minutes, and I'll give you a chance to do it. It was actually having a lot of problems with Chrome crashing and other things like that. And the Ubuntu desktop does not bring in the Avahi auto discovery packages, you know, the zeroconf. So she couldn't see my printer. And that was fun.
Neither could I. Time.
God damn it. Fine, I'm done.
But,
go ahead, Sound Chaser.
Well, was LXDE, was it the LXQT or was it old school LXDE?
It was whatever comes in Ubuntu, probably the Ubuntu desktop, I'm guessing. That would probably just be old-school LXDE.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they switched over to LXQT or not. Even with LXQT, it's still, I don't even think they have version 1.0 out yet, but it's still, you know, I wouldn't say it's completed, so it's probably quite rough around the edges.
I have to admit, I was disappointed when I heard that Razer QT was going to join the LXDE group. That kind of disappointed me. I'm not going to really rant about LXDE. I mean, if people really want to know about my problems with LXDE, they can talk to me outside of here. I've ranted about it before. I think I ranted about it last year on this show, and I think I've ranted about it at least 2 or 3 times on Kernel Panic. And, you know, I just don't think I need to propagate that too much further. I did. What was the other thing? You did say something that I was going to mention. Oh, Chrome crashing. Actually, I am having problems with Chrome crashing, and I still have not figured them out. And all I can guess at this point is there is something going on with their JavaScript interpreter, because certain sites I go to, I can literally open one site and it will crash it every single time. And including one of those being DuckDuckGo, will just automatically crash it. And no error, no nothing. It just, boom, gone.
That's a new feature. It's called Use Google, you freetard. But no, my wife's Chrome crashed so hard, it ended up restarting in French. Guys?
Uh-huh.
Sorry, okay. Kevin was talking to me in IRC. And he asked me, why not XFCE? And I just responded, I love XFCE. That's my primary desktop. That's what I've been using now for several years. And it's probably the most comfortable desktop I've got or I've seen. I'm not impressed with either KDE or the newer GNOME stuff at all.
I switch back and forth between either OpenBox or GNOME 3. Just depends how I feel.
And how do you feel today, Pegwall?
Feeling kind of GNOME 3 today. Especially with all the rebooting I've had to do to get things working. I mean, it's going to be one of those days, I think.
One of those days that you're happy that some Linux distributions have actually cared about boot speed?
Pretty much, yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I know where this is going. Every podcast in the last 6 months have gone. Now we're going to have to start talking init versus systemd.
Actually, no. I was going to take it someplace else, but okay.
No, please take it somewhere else.
Look, systemd forever.
We're glad that we have you on record, Pegwall, but we know that you just really have trouble seeing the truth.
Time.
I was going to say, my day is going to be mostly spent being a Windows sysadmin, so, you know, init versus systemd would be something refreshing. I'm trying to get this dev server built up by the end of the year, and let me tell you, I would love an actual featureful command prompt. And don't say PowerShell, because I will come to your house and I will cut you.
Well, you've got 13 hours and 40 minutes to go, at least in my time zone.
Yeah, I don't know how successful I'm going to be. I've gotten the mobile site up, which is good, but the other one has a lot of legacy that is assigned to it. We have a service that needs to be in its own virtual pool and all this other stuff, and it's just like, I don't want to do this. It's not my forte. I'm a developer. I'm not a server admin.
Well, I'm going back to typing, because I've got a couple of articles I want to get out before I'd like to get them out in the next couple hours, so I'm going to try to finish these up.
As long as you don't have your mic on while you're typing, we'll be okay.
No, I'm on press to talk, so no problem there.
What's your push to talk key?
Scroll lock.
Good choice.
Mine's right control.
I don't even think I have a scroll lock key on this keyboard.
It's a good choice because you almost use it for nothing. I've never figured out why we don't actually use scroll lock for its actual intended purpose.
Which was to keep it so that you can only scroll in certain directions, or that the arrow keys scroll rather than using page up, page down.
It was to actually scroll the whole screen or window instead of doing up and down like the normal cursor keys.
Yeah, but that's what page up and page down are for.
No, because page up and page down are relative to the file size, whereas scroll locking is relative to the screen size.
What if I'm not using a screen?
Well, then it makes a good push-to-talk key.
Yes, it certainly does. And actually, it still does anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, like I was asking what kind of, you know, what your push-to-talk key was in case you wouldn't accidentally hit it while typing. Due to the weirdness of my keyboard, I'm actually using the delete key for push-to-talk.
I would never be able to use that key for a push-to-talk key.
Well, normally I have Mumble set up for gaming. And the keys I have available to my left thumb, which is, you know, because I use my left hand to navigate because I'm right-handed, are Control, Alt, Backspace, Home, End, and Delete. And Backspace is my jump key, which confuses the hell out of other gamers.
I chose right arrow because it was there.
Are you sure it's not the greater than sign?
Time.
That one was a low quality joke, but I'll let it stand. Well, have fun typing.
I think that one went over my head for some reason.
Pegwell is not blind, he's low vision, but we're including him on the blind jokes.
Well, while we're, you know, if we're mentioning aimings, and of course this was still back on my Windows gaming days, and I'll probably replace it sometime if they still have it. I had one of those USB deals where you could, you know, you had a partial keyboard so you could set where your long fingers would rest, and then you could use action, you know, left, right, forward, back was like a hat that was under your thumb. And the weird thing, it defaulted to a big key under your thumb also to jump, which didn't work out at all. So I always had to read that. Never got a chance to try it to see for compatibility on Linux. It might have been a lot more difficult for that because, of course, the software to change the configuration was Windows. So I don't know if you could probably change what the default key did in each game rather than changing the configuration on the device. Has anybody tried one of those? Because, man, for a shooter, that just was so much better than the standard keyboard.
Yeah, I mean, mouse aiming really changed that. The one thing I'd say is, how does it plug into your system? Was it USB or was it the old 15-pin game port?
No, it was USB. As far as the system was concerned, it was another keyboard.
I was going to say, maybe if the joystick shows up as a joystick, then the only thing you'd have to do is there's some USB kernel module, I know somebody right, that allows you to sniff USB events so you can reverse engineer devices.
No, the hat showed up as... it's been so long since WSAD.
WSAD. Ugh, I use ESDF myself because I'm an old Quake player. Means I don't have to move my hands off the home row. But that's weird that the hat would show up as keys, but I guess this was back before USB joysticks were big, or if it was probably made as a device so that you could play your older games with it that didn't do joystick input.
Well, you know, for shooters, really, a joystick isn't all that good because you do have mouse aiming. This was intended so that you could use your left thumb for movement. It wouldn't do any good for to switch because it was shaped like your hand. And you know, you keep your right hand on the joystick, and then you had enough assignable keys other to do jump, use, you know, open door, etc., that were under your long fingers on your left hand. You had a couple rows of keys you could use. Now, the one thing I used a lot in GTA, but it totally messed up flying. Well, it depends. I had that in hack where you could control vehicles with the joystick, and it didn't work with that at all. So, you know, I had to go back to controlling everything with a mouse and keyboard.
Yeah, I do know that there's a program called JoyToKey for Windows. I don't know if there's anything like that for Linux, mainly because I don't care. I mean, I have a I have a SciTech Rumble Force. I think it's the P2500. The Rumble doesn't work. It's a fine controller. Apparently, with newer versions of SDL, it actually shows up as a controller, not just as a joystick. So, meaning it actually kind of mimics like the Xbox 360 controllers that all the gamers use to plug into their machines these days. If I weren't using Debian Stable, it probably is fine in testing. I just haven't moved it forward or tried Ubuntu or something like that. Then that would work. There's some, I think it's called Xbox DRV, Xbox Drive or something like that. There's one where it actually allows a joystick to emulate a Xbox controller, and the Rumble Force is supported, which is nice, but as I said, my SDL is so old, it shows up as a joystick, not as a controller, so I'm stuck playing some of these games from the humble store with a keyboard and a mouse anyway.
Okay, and I want to break in here and say Happy New Year to Myanmar, Cocos Islands, Yangon, Naipaida, Mandalay, and Bantam.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Hey, Broom, are you using Debian due to, you know, for free software purposes, or is there another reason why you're using Debian?
That was the main reason. Hold on, phone call.
I do know this, if you take a PS4 controller or PS3 controller and hook it up to your Linux box via USB, it'll just read it and it'll work.
Yeah, I was looking at that. Well, I bought an old original Xbox at a yard sale. I paid $10 for it, so it wouldn't hurt too bad. But just to play with XBMC, though, these days, of course, for found out you got to have one or two games to software hack it, plus a converter from one of the game controller ports to an SD card, so that you could load software on it, so you can get in and load XBMC. So by the time you get all that, it's going to be cheaper to run out to the store and buy yourself a Blu-ray player almost. But I was just doing it for a project and haven't really got it done yet. It's still sitting there, but lost my train. Oh, controllers, yeah. I did look in the box. I've got a couple original Xbox controllers and a Nintendo Game System controller, and I did find out just about anything other than Nintendo, it's just a simple plug that you can buy for a couple bucks off Amazon. But if you've got a Nintendo controller, then you have to do some, you know, go through a box that has some logic in it, and they seem to be about $20 to $30 on those. Just random technical information, throwing it out there. I thought we said earlier we weren't going to talk about console systems.
I thought you guys said you were going to talk about him because he had nothing to talk about. And besides, what was Techwell doing? I thought he gave up podcasting.
You know, you've been podcasting with him like the last couple weeks, haven't you?
See, now he spoiled it. You spoiled my premise. Yeah, I was just reading the IRC. I'm a crotchety old man.
You are.
I don't know. You need to bring a stepladder and come over here and we'll duke it out man to man.
Look, I'll show up there when you grow a full head of hair.
Okay, you got me. So it's looking like my New Year's Eve party is going to go to the rain tonight. It's raining pretty good right now. Well, I don't know if it's pretty good, but it's raining.
Hey, where did my invite go?
Oh, Jonathan, buddy, how are you? Merry Christmas, Happy New Year.
Good, how you doing?
Buddy, I miss you.
Well, where's my invite?
You can come here anytime you like. In fact, my Genesis Coupe is at my house in New York. Just if you get to Long Island, you can drive it down.
Perfect. I'm on my way. Me and Info Lookup will come down.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Yeah, if he learned how to drive a stick, he could drive it. Yeah, he was fun.
Well, you can teach him to shoot and drive all in the same weekend.
That's what I'm talking about.
Jonathan or... yeah, I'm wishing my tiki hut was better roofed, because the roof is coming apart, because then it's lightly raining here, and it's probably going to continue that throughout the evening. I looked at the aviation forecast. They said vicinity showers, and we're planning on hanging out by the fire pit and roasting marshmallows, making s'mores and that kind of thing.
It's supposed to roast a pig in the fire pit.
Yeah, too many Jews around here.
Oh, yeah, that wouldn't go over well.
Well,
wow, really?
Well, I think I'm going to be the only Christian at the party tonight.
Can we get back to something more fun to talk about? Like blind people
drive-bys?
Yeah,
what are you doing podcasting?
Time.
Oh, that was beautiful. That was beautiful.
You aren't even at OLF. You don't get to do that.
He does now. We grandfathered him in.
Yeah, screw you, pal.
Hey, Brom, have you ever checked out Parabola?
I think so. The name sounds familiar. You mind cluing me in as to what it is again?
It's a free software, Arch Linux, basically.
Okay, yeah, I've heard of it because, you know, it shows up on those lists of, like, free software distros. I had not.
Because I was thinking that could be it. You know, not that you want to have to reinstall your whole system just to get the SDL stuff for your controller, but if you are looking to get newer packages, Parabola might be the answer.
Yeah, I might take a look at it. I mean, I just stuck with Debian because I'm familiar with the way the install system and stuff works. And, you know, I was going to make some joke about how Arch is supposedly, like, has this huge learning curve. And it's like, yeah, you're building an accessible Linux off the most, like, inaccessible base I can think of.
Well, the Manjaro, they built, like, a really awesome build system. So I'm utilizing that. They kind of tweaked it a little bit for me, but I'm utilizing their build system to make the ISOs and all that stuff.
Are you sending a lot of stuff upstream?
Yeah. Actually, Manjaro takes whatever changes we make, and they push them into their stuff, too. So it's pretty cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, I've just been kind of – I've been playing mostly games that are either, you know, keyboard and mouse oriented or something where if I don't have a controller, it's not going to kill me. I mean, but for some of the stuff that – you know, it's like some of the games I've picked up, it's like I really kind of wish I had a controller for this. Especially though, even though my keyboard is Cherry MX Brown switches and they're very nice and they feel great on my fingers, I think this is 2-key, maybe 3. It's definitely not N key rollover. So I can keyboard geek out on you guys here if you want.
Are they clacky?
No, the Cherry switches aren't clacky. I mean, there is actually a little speaker in this thing. It's the Kinesis Advantage. And the really nice thing I found about it was somebody took the time to reverse engineer a new – well, he reverse engineered the hardware, like to figure out how the lines were hooked up, and built a free firmware. So if you're willing to like basically solder in a new ROM and do that, you can have free firmware for your keyboard, which is actually very nice considering that was one of the things that was like, yeah, I'm using all this free software on my computer, but I have this firmware keyboard that could still like, you know, I don't necessarily trust it. Yeah, or, you know, copy my passwords and stick them in RAM somewhere and then send them to the NSA. Because that's the only way they're going to break email encryption. They get your private key and they get your password. That's how they do it. They don't sit there and brute force it. So it was like, oh yeah, I have this great keyboard and now there's free firmware for it. And it's like, I'm still afraid of the soldering iron. I mean, this keyboard was $300 when I bought it. It's $350 now to replace it if I want a new one.
You got a link for that? I want to take a look at it.
Sure, I'll post it and somebody, Mr. 50 can stick it in the show notes.
I'll solder it for you, man. Just send it up my way and I'll take care of it.
Time, yeah, guys, on that, let's see, 2.5 hours my time at the minimum, I'm out of here for pretty much the rest of the afternoon. I've posted both. Somebody's doing some editing on the email pad, and I'm putting my show notes in the Google spreadsheet I created. So I guess so. At some time, I'll combine them both so Ken has show notes. But my point is, I'm going to be here this afternoon, and I hope some. And I'm trying to do three things at once, so I'm not getting everything down as we go. So I hope somebody will take on the responsibility to going into the pad, which I posted a while back in Hashogcast Planet, to keep up with the show notes. Not to bring everybody down. And oh, I think I forgot a 30-minute one. Greetings 10 minutes late to Myanmar and the Cocos Islands, Yang. No, I did that. Okay. I have been up since 4 a.m.
God bless you.
Probably crash, man.
Oh, I wouldn't. As much coffee as I had, I wouldn't get enough sleep by the time I have to go out to the farm to do any good. But I do hope somebody's planning to, be on there after around midnight U.S. time, because I think one way or another I'm going to crash sometime before the recording is over.
Just make sure you don't start snoring with your push-to-talk key down.
Well, I can always edit in that HPR we recorded.
That was amazing. Having lived through it, it was amazing.
Try sleeping in the same room as that guy.
I did. Well, actually, no. I was on the floor above him at Oddcast Planet Live. I was also up till about 2 in the morning. I think I was making English muffins that night. And, hearing it was like dueling chainsaws.
Hey, Jonathan, do you remember seeing Brom and me in the room at the same time?
No. Time.
You walked into that one, dude.
Speaking of that, Brome, you should remember if you ever saw Flying Rich.
That's I tend to walk into stuff too. Time.
That's when Brome wishes he couldn't see. Time.
Oh, Jesus. I told you it was going to get bad. You didn't believe me. Why didn't you believe me? No, I don't remember seeing Flying Witch, and he doesn't remember me, so it's sort of like we were there at the same conference and hung out with the same group of people, but never actually met.
Yeah, I gotta find Door-to-Door Geek and see what he says.
Yeah, he'd remember me. We finally met.
Can see.
Was Door sober enough this time to remember meeting anyone?
Well, that's another question.
I think initially at one point, I mean, I don't know when he started. We didn't party with you guys. We went and hung out with Murph and played a couple of experimental games. I don't think we actually got to Jungle Speed, though.
That was Murph. That. I've been trying to think of that the last couple days.
Murph is always a guy you want to hang out with.
Yeah, except when, except when he plays left-handed. That bastard. Okay, because K-Wisher asked, hi K-Wisher, 50, how long are you making these HPR episodes?
If anybody had looked in the schedule I took time to make and posted in the newsletter, then you would know that to make the 8 segments that Ken had already had scheduled, that out of 26 hours, that required 2 4-hour segments and the rest of them 3 hour, and I had those done with a cell outline, and nothing against Kevin, but something about him signing up like on every second cell messed that up, so I'm not quite sure where we are, and I've been doing too many things to go back and find that breakdown. However, Ken has emailed me and told me he already has the first 4 hours posted. So I'm afraid, I don't know, I'm afraid we're, you know, Ken was clairvoyant and right all along that he's going to get doing all the editing, which just isn't fair.
Okay, well, everyone blame that one on K-Wisher. But thanks. And this is going to be a problem. I can't edit the Etherpad and talk at the same time.
Yeah, it thinks about Etherpad and other stuff like that, like, well, not that I really care about Google Docs, but anything sort of like that is totally, like, not accessible at all. Like, all that JavaScript-heavy stuff is not accessible at all.
How would... This is a philosophical question only. How would anyone be able to keep up with the multiple editings, like, in such a way where the... like, because of all the different places in the document that could be edited at one point, like, the amount of voices and the amount of words would just confuse the heck out of anybody trying to follow along.
So, like, on an Etherpad document, like, you can literally sort of go anywhere within the document and edit it at any point then?
Yes, and multiple people can edit it at the same time. Yeah, they color code everyone's talking, or, like, typing, which, yeah, you know, is completely useless for you.
Yeah, that'd be tough. I don't even know if you could make that accessible. Or someone would have to be very determined to do it. Because Orca can pick up sort of live, I'm not sure what you call it, live, like, say if you're on a website and, like, there's a, you know, even a timer or something where, you know, a number's changing or, you know, stuff like that. Orca can keep up with stuff like that, but I don't know if it could keep up with, like, a whole page kind of just changing in various points at any time.
Yeah, I think that would be ridiculous. I mean, I've tried using NVDA, which is the Windows Non-Visual Desktop Access, which is supposed to be a pretty good free software package for Windows blind users. And what's the main thing I do in Windows? Visual Studio. It chokes horribly.
That's not surprising.
Well, I mean, like, you're editing a source code file, and it, like, starts reading from the top anytime it changes the whole file.
Oh, yeah, Orca will do that, too, with certain, packages, too. I'm not sure what causes that.
I think it's probably something where it's refreshing the text area. If it's doing some, like, source code highlighting, it might do that. I don't know. I just found it so annoying. I was like, I am so glad I do not need this software to be able to use this computer.
Oh, go ahead. Say, you're so glad you can see.
I know.
That was the meekest time ever.
That's because somebody didn't want to make that call.
Well, I've said it before, Jonathan. I think everybody here and you know, and Trenton and Mike Ray, all you guys, you know, I can't imagine, you know, doing what you do, you know, without being able to see. I mean, the computer just, it seems to me like magic, and it probably doesn't sound coming out good, but you know, just the rest of the life and everything, you know, there's a lot of things I would rather do without.
Yeah, Orca, speaking of sort of like IDEs, Orca doesn't work well with like Eclipse at all either. Like, pretty much if you're going to like develop, from in my experience with, you know, free software, Linux, like, you just got to use a strip text editor.
I was going to say, does anything work well with Eclipse? I've used it. I like it. It's not a bad software package. I mean, except for the fact that it includes its own frigging package manager, and it just reminds me of all the IBM software I have ever used, including Lotus Notes, which is not a good thing. It just has this, I don't know, it has this IBM-ness to it, and it irks me sometimes. It was otherwise fine. I did a couple courses for my master's degree using entirely Eclipse, and I didn't have any problems with it. But yeah, not having some of those niceties that I'm really used to, like source code highlighting and being able to figure out the API from context-sensitive dropdowns and assistance in the text editor, you know, which you wouldn't get, because I'm not sure those could really be read to you effectively. I mean, they might be able to if there was some way for it to flag that, like, hey, these are the options that you selected. I mean, I am addicted to control space. Absolutely addicted to it, especially in Visual Studio, where it is nearly impossible to get anything done without IntelliSense. But to have to drop to a standard text editor because that's the only thing that's accessible would be a huge hit to my productivity.
Yeah, and I mean, for me in my computer science classes, you know, we'd be working on developing something, and I could be like, you know, 50 lines down from where I, you know, set a variable, and I'd be like, oh shoot, what did I name it again? I have to, like, you know, jump back up to that. Okay, that's what I call it. Okay, yeah. Then jump back down to 50 lines. You know, it was really, really tough.
Yeah, you would need a lot of mental discipline that, you know, you're trying to concentrate on other things. It's like, oh yeah, I have to remember these variable names. The other thing was, I have one question for you, Jonathan.
Shoot.
Did you test out a computer graphics?
No, I passed with flying colors.
Time.
Actually, my computer science degree didn't require computer graphics, strangely enough.
Yeah, it was an elective. I went for a lot of the math minor heavy courses when I did my undergrad. When I did grad, I went for systems engineering because I had a boss most of the way through that was picky about what courses he would select to pay for, which was not exactly fun when I later learned that he was the only one in the company that was doing that, and everybody else was just like, oh, it's part of a degree program? Go for it.
Ah, you know, so that sucked. You know what an interesting class is when you can't see? Discrete math.
Time.
Ooh. No, no, no. That's not funny. That's, wow. Because I like discrete math. I mean, it's like, hey, here's all these rules about numbers, and oh yeah, you can throw half this shit out because you're only worried about integers. But yeah, there's probably a lot of graphing and things like that too that you just can't see and you can't deal with.
Right, and it's just all some crazy symbols and stuff that was, you know, hard to keep track of too.
Oh god, especially if they're using some stupid encoding and they're not using like the full Unicode standard that assumes that your text-to-speech doesn't choke on it.
And exactly.
I mean, everyone else is just worried about if they have the fonts for it or not. Ugh, that's awful. And discrete math is such an important part of computer science.
Oh yeah, yeah, that was fun times.
I was going to say, especially when you're doing things like number representation probably wouldn't be too bad because you can think about it conceptually in terms of the bits and how numbers are represented. That might have been okay. I don't know. I'd probably just have to put you in a class and see what you would be able to do, because I guess I can't think like a blind user. That's tough for me.
Yeah, I mean, my experience in going when I went back to school was interesting. I think something, there needs to be some sort of like hybrid or something, someone needs to consider, cause blind kids obviously don't learn the same way as normal kids or, you know, people that can see. So when I went to school, I was the first blind student they had in like 20 years. So none of the teachers really knew how to teach me, and I wasn't really sure, like, how to approach these subjects, because I had never seen half of this stuff that they were teaching me, so I couldn't even explain to them, well, let's try it this way, let's try it that way. So it was like a learning experience for everyone. It was, you know, there's some good stuff, some bad stuff, but it was interesting. And yeah, there needs some, I don't know, someone, it'd be cool to sit down with some teachers that were actually interested in figuring out a way to teach, you know, blind students, you know, computer science, because I think that would be really effective. There's a lot of blind people out there that could become programmers, but, you know, a lot of people slash the system kind of push blind people away from being programmers. So that's a whole nother topic for another time, probably, but it'd be cool to have teachers that were interested in approaching this topic.
Oh, I've got one for you. How would a screen reader cope with syntax highlighting? Like, would it have some, I mean, like, can you have, let's just assume that we have a perfect screen reader that can do things like denote when something is a keyword or reserved word versus something else.
Phone. I don't know. I'll probably wait for Brom to get back so you can hear the answer. But I'd imagine it could be done. But again, it's not a problem right now, because I would say, you know, the majority of blind people aren't necessarily programming, so they don't see it as a problem, or they don't know doing things like that exist, especially people that are born blind. They don't realize that you can do, you know, text highlighting and stuff like that. So again, that's why having teachers that would approach the students knowing they're blind and just teaching them in a totally different way. That's why I think it'd be really cool to see something like that done.
Hey, can we get off the blind topic? It really offends me. Like being blind as a civil right or anything like that.
Oh, yeah.
Or a guaranteed right in the Constitution.
Not in the Constitution, does it? So I'm assuming you're a strict interpreter then, Rich.
Yes, I am.
Okay, there you go. We should just ship all blind people off to Australia then.
Then you become a film people, right? You have to run the cameras.
Exactly. then the Australian films would be, you know, booming. They'd be breaking into the cinemas over here in the U.S. and taking off.
Well, yeah, that one that Peter directed with you was an absolute blockbuster.
Yeah, I bet. And Peter was a good director, too. He gave, you know, good instructions. He was motivating.
About as motivating as a slave master.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry for dropping out there. I had a phone call.
Oh, no problem. But I was going to say, Brom, that I think with, like, text highlighting stuff, that probably could be done somehow. Like, if the screen reader could say, like, the color of the text or something. Like, there's something that probably could be done. But I was saying, though, it's interesting because probably I don't want to say the majority or most, but blind people that do program, especially if they're born blind, they're probably not even told what text highlighting is, because they don't, you know, they've never seen it, or, you know, maybe it doesn't make sense to them. So that's why I was saying before, like, it'd be cool to find teachers that would approach teaching computer science from a blind perspective and explaining how, you know, how these things work. And if a screen reader could utilize those things, it'd be even more interesting.
Yeah, I was thinking more along the lines of the words that if it were not just highlighted colors, but actually semantically sensitive, and that might be tough to do on a live document. Like, it's not too bad with HTML, and I don't mean the JavaScript heavy Ajax-y stuff we're getting. You know, I had a couple, I wanted to talk to you about Orca on that later, but we'll get back to it. I'm like, if it's static, you know, it can figure out, oh, this is bold, and you can figure out this is, you know, this is supposed to be read a different way. This is a section heading, and you get this semantic highlighting, which is very nice, especially with the HTML5 stuff. And you can even do CSS to say that certain things should be read in different voices and stuff like that. And I've never seen anyone do it, but it's in the standard. But I have absolutely no clue how you would handle that in a document you're actually able to edit.
Yeah, I wouldn't either, actually. But I guess technically it could be done, though.
Yeah, I mean, like, you'd have to say something like, you know, would you say, like, would it have it say, like, variable name or, like, variable class? I mean, like, how would you read code in a semantic manner? That's tough. That's, like, PhD level shit right there.
Yeah, and I also said this, too. Unfortunately, there's probably not enough people, or, you know, blind developers that were either, I don't want to say complaining about this, but, you know, just thinking of something like this, because, again, it's something like that would be totally beneficial, but there's not enough people out there to even ask these types of questions. Or again, because of the way they're taught, from a site perspective, they're not thinking of these types of questions.
Hey, Jonathan, that brings to mind a good question. I've never really heard you talk whether people working with you are blind or sighted. What's the stats on that?
As far as, like, with what?
Developers and, you know, people helping out with the Sonar project.
Oh, yes. Well, I have two other blind guys that are helping out with Sonar now. Like, one guy, Kyle, he works on the GNOME builds and stuff. And then, excuse me. And then, this other guy, Kendall, he's working on the mate version of Sonar that we're doing. And, Kyle actually helped out this other distribution called F123. It's a distribution based in South America. This guy does a lot of stuff in a bunch of countries in South America. And we helped convert Sonar over to his distro. So now he's using the same kind of build system Sonar is and everything for his distro, which is focused on, his distribution is specifically focused on just blind people. So we helped him out moving his distro over to the Sonar build system and stuff. So he's been doing that, and Kyle helped out this guy with that. So he's been doing that. And then Larry Bushy is actually from Going Linux. He did a ton of stuff for us on the website. So now the Sonar website doesn't look like a blind guy designed anymore, so that's good.
So South America, is it also in Spanish?
Yeah, it's in Portuguese, Spanish, and I think English. And I think he even has a few other languages. I think he's worked with some company or not, organizations over in like West Africa also. So he's doing stuff for them over there also.
Now, have you had any conversations with Mad Dog? Because I know Mad Dog's big. What is that country where his grandson's in or godson?
Oh, he does a ton of stuff in Brazil.
Yeah, I mean, what kind of conversations have you had with Mad Dog about accessibility in South America?
I've had quite a few. He says that there's a lot of need down there, obviously, and he thought it'd be great to at some point try and get down there and really introduce a few organizations to Sonar and see what we could do down there with Sonar.
Oh, very cool.
But I'm gonna have to take off for a little bit, guys. I'll bounce back in a little bit later. But everyone have a good day. And
hey, buddy, you're not driving tonight, are you?
Oh yeah, I'm the designated driver.
Time. All right, since I missed the call out and it looks like 5150 has dropped off face of the world here, we're about 7 minutes late, but that's okay. I didn't want to stop good conversation. Greetings in the new year to much of Indonesia, Thailand, and seven more. Some cities would be Jakarta, Bangkok, Hanoi, and Phnom Penh.
Did I want to do that?
Wait a minute. Wow, hold on.
And Pegwell's been to all of them.
He has. It's UTC 707. What the heck?
Ask me what they look like. I don't know. Time.
Oh, you're just legally blind. That's really a scam.
Yeah, before we get too far past, I'm only showing on my system clock 4 minutes past. Greetings to Bangladesh, some regions of Russia, Dhaka, Almaty, Bishkek, and Thimphu.
Isn't that next hour? Because that's 1800 Zulu, and we're at 1700, I thought.
No, I'm at the top. I put a deal in at the top of my schedule to show. No, okay, you're right. 1700. I got off one, so I apologize. Indonesia, Thailand, Jakarta, Bangkok, Hanoi, and Phnom Penh.
You guys are granted an extra hour of 2014.
Use it wisely.
Hey guys, I'm running out for lunch.
Yep, we're off by one. We fence posted.
Yeah, I went in all the trouble of putting in a bookmarked real-time clock in my spreadsheet, and I haven't been paying any attention to it. Bad 5150, bad.
I'll get the newspaper.
Oh, Ken, when you hear this, all my show notes are going to be off by an hour. Well, no, actually, somebody's been doing it in the pet. In the pad too, so I can line them up using that. And the trouble is, and I've been looking through. I didn't. Well, where I went, I was trying to find. I know his name, and I can't think of it. Who actually provides this server? And I apologize. Somebody will tell me now. I guess no gas.
Neustetter.
Yes, Neustetter. John Neustetter. Thank you. Easier just to ask the room than to search for it. But apparently, none of us thought to request that he increase the number of slots to 100 for today. So we're stuck at 20. So, whoever's in the channel idling and not speaking can drop out. I'm going to drop out my recording bot because hopefully Cobra 2 and K-Wisher and Ken have got it. I may see if I can look back and see if I can record the stream instead, which wouldn't take up a slot.
All right, I'm going to drop off for a bit then. I'll just listen to the stream.
Testing.
Hey, 51.
Can anyone hear me? No, Seb, we totally can't hear you.
5150, did you mention there was a Google Doc also?
I did get hit.
Seb, we can hear you.
Let's see. Rich, are you in Oddcast Planet? I'll post it there.
Okay. And I'll drop off.
It's number of users on the server, not number of users in the channel, right?
Right.
Where's the sound notification turn off? I haven't used Mumble for quite a while.
If you've got the channel list open, you'll see the lips light up. Except paywall.
We don't want to text what to speech ring.
And unfortunately, I don't think there'd be a point now at asking John to add more for the day because he has to contact his provider. It's not like it's a local thing on his system. So I think it's number of connections to his virtual server, actually, that is the limiting factor.
Yeah, it's going to drive me nuts because I don't remember how to turn off the text-to-speech either.
Exactly, it gets annoying.
Now, there is a text-to-speech in the messages. That might be it.
Yeah, the message thing.
You have to turn on the advanced settings.
Wasn't it in there in the initial setup? If you do the initial configure setup, it'll ask you, or you can just unclick a box.
Yeah, but it's already after you've got Mumble configured. Going back through the wizard is a pain in the butt. Also, you can silence you.
Yeah, I think there's a tick box in audio input, but I'm not sure if that's what it's for.
Turning off readback own messages is actually very useful.
Okay, that's interesting. I could actually do the volume on the text-to-speech by looks like it. So I put down to nothing, so it should be gone, I guess.
That'll do it. I don't know if it's optimized enough where if you turn off the volume down to nothing, it doesn't actually generate the audio.
I don't want the audio, and I think it's okay now, in that sense.
Perfect. So, hi, Seb.
Yeah, hi.
Happy New Year, or soon enough, anyway.
Well, it's gone dark, but it'll be another few hours yet.
So, hi, Peg. Well, we haven't talked in a while, but apparently you had given up podcasting. It was because I wasn't coming around. Is that it? Didn't hear my silky smooth voice?
Exactly.
Well, I'm very, very, very sorry.
I haven't done podcasting for ages, but it can be fun.
I figured I'd carry the torch for a little bit as 50 falls asleep at his desk, so I can update show notes and things like that. Until I get another phone call.
Was the time zone missed just now? I mean, I only just got on here again, so... when it's just been...
Still big parts of East Asia. In about an hour and a half here, we'll hit India. So, Pegwall.
Yes, bro.
How is your photography coming? Every once in a while, I see some stuff on Facebook that you've posted where you're trying to do like these really like artsy pictures of people.
Is that a problem, or...?
No, just... Yeah, I don't know any of them, that's all. But you got any new gear or anything lately you want to talk about?
Honestly, not really, no. I plan to order some new gear, though.
Tell me about it.
Well, as of now, I have not really been shooting with flashes. I've only been using continuous lighting. So I'm going to invest in two flashes that'll come with the wireless triggers for them. So I can just mount one thing to my camera's hot shoe, and it'll relay all the information about the flashes, and it'll be awesome.
I'm going to invest in a roll of seamless paper for backdrops because the fabric ones I have, which are made of muslin, they're the devil because you cannot keep those things from wrinkling. It is impossible.
So you just carry like a little steamer with you and a hot iron, and it doesn't help?
Generally, I just like soak them down with water and chuck them in the dryer. But because they're so large, it takes a very long time to dry them. Like a good 2.5 to 3 hours. So if I need to get the wrinkles out, I have to pretty much prepare a good day in advance before, you know, like someone comes to my house to get photographed.
Oh, that's cool. Tell me about this networked flash thing. It seemed like it was like one flash and then all of the information gets sent back to the camera and included in what, EXIF tags? Tell me about that a little bit, because that sounds exciting, but I know nothing about it.
EXIF tags, what?
Well, don't EXIF tags, like when you take a picture of the digital camera, include lots of other cute information that you have to strip out if you want to post on the internet?
Really, the only thing I'd worry about posting in an EXIF tag is, like, location data. But, you don't really have to worry about that too much in, like, your DSLR. Especially if you said, hey, don't put that in the data.
Fair enough. I didn't know if the EXIF tags were stored, like, things like white balance and things like that, so that you could recreate the shot more, like, if you're doing something with photo editing or post-processing, that you wanted all that information at time of capture. Like, this flash fired, this flash didn't fire, and, you know, this is the white balance levels and things like that.
It is actually kind of interesting, all the stuff that is in the EXIF data. It'll tell you not only the lens you're using, it'll tell you the serial number of it, the serial number of your camera, how many shutter actuations your camera has had, and it'll tell you the, like, actual focal length of your lens.
Meaning every single picture you take has a serial number.
Well, it depends on the numbering scheme, and you can adjust that on the camera. But I didn't realize that the shutter releases on the body were recorded. Because I did like a 24-hour time lapse, and then I read about how awful that is on an SLR. Because realistically, your shutters are good for, you know, n number of uses. But Peggy, I want to talk to you about backgrounds, and because I did event photography, we're always moving backgrounds around. There's these fabric backgrounds that you basically crumble up and they look great, and that's what we used all the time.
Yeah, those are generally muslin.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, you just, when you were done with them, you just threw them in the nylon bag any old way, and they just worked out great.
Honestly, it's a look I don't really dig, so I try to avoid it.
No, okay. Don't mean to cramp your style, buddy.
Although, Brome, I did feel a little bit complimented when you said the photo I posted was a stock photo.
Yeah, it looked like a stock photo. I really need to make sure that I don't have the friggin' Etherpad highlighted again. But yeah, dude, I mean, that's at least something. You can sell some stock photography. Dude, man, you transmitted, but I did not hear anything.
Sorry, I've got it connected to my alt key, and then when I'm just all tabbing around, it mics up. Sorry about that.
No worries. Welcome back.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I've missed a whole lot, but I'm sure something's interesting been happening.
It's been quiet the last hour. I mean, but, well, not really the last hour, but just after a couple people, everyone dropped off for lunch over here in America, so.
No, wait till Peggy and I start talking about guns.
I have to scroll up to see when the last one was. No, we're about 2 hours since the last one. Might want to give it another hour.
Yeah, Seb, I started scrambling when you said in the IRC that we had run out of allocations the slots in the room. I don't think there's a thing we can do about it now.
Yeah, well, I knew I got on, but somebody left, so.
No, you're talking about the Mumble Room or the chat room?
The whole server, I think, actually.
Yeah, the Mumble Room.
It's limited to 20 slots.
And, I still see my bot in, though I disconnected, so maybe it's everybody disconnected. I'm seeing X's through there, and I see Father Finch with his headphones off. What do you guys see? Because I've probably seen it wrong in Plumble, though I can drop off and come back in and get it right.
Father Finch is muted and deafened, as is a couple of the K5 Tuxes too, as is K-Wisher. But yeah, your bot's done, gone, dude.
Okay, I still see it. So let me see if I can hit them up through IRC and say if they're going to be muted and deafened, which I can't, you know, I still don't understand the utility of that, if they could give up their slots to let people in.
Yeah. Yeah, there shouldn't be any idlers on the 720. Really. Well, not 4 hours anyway.
Has anyone got the link to Peck Wall's stock photo so I can take a look?
I will link you in just a minute.
Peck Wall, why are you called... I was wondering that. Why are you called this other name? Which I probably would pronounce that's my name. Wrong. Probably would you pronounce that name wrong, so how do you say that?
It's TJ Worley.
Okay.
Yeah, you think his mother actually calls him Pegwall?
Well, no.
See, I have friends whose parents actually call me Brome. Because that's how I was introduced, and that's how I am addressed, and it's a little weird, but, you know, it's just funny. I can say that, yeah, compared to most people, I mean, my online nick has bled into my real life quite a bit. I have a separate gaming nick, of course, but... I mean, when you come to the conventions and the meetups, yeah, you see a lot of people using their nicknames. Well, in certain cases, like Jonathan Nato, we just call him Jonathan. And apparently, Cobra 2's wife calls me Brome too, which is I find hilarious.
Yeah, but some of these IRC names are interesting. So why is somebody called that and all that?
Well, sometimes people get they'll use like. Slang or slurs in their names, and people just run with it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm still trying to figure out why Honky Magoo calls himself that.
I like to think just because it's hilarious.
Big nose. I forget the story he told us once in Linux Lugcast.
If I remember right, it's the name of the dog from Home Movies, I believe.
That works. See, everyone has a story behind their nickname, so...
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Going in the show notes as etymology of IRC handles. That's awesome. I didn't realize I had this power today. When I say somebody's nickname, they show up in a couple of minutes. Hey, Honky.
Hey, how's it going? Yeah, Pegwall's got it right.
Yay, I remembered something.
Don't let it get to your head, Pegwall.
Too late.
I see, I was driving, listening.
Apparently still driving. Mumble and 3G don't always mix.
Very true.
Well, actually, I guess I'm connected through Wi-Fi right now, but when I was just on 3G, Peter64 said it never sounded better.
Yeah, but were you on 3G while driving? Tower handoffs are awful for packet latency.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that. Well, that probably explains why everybody drubs Rich and Gorkon when they're on the road.
That's just probably road rage, too.
So is everyone American on here at the moment, except for me, or...?
Nope. English.
Okay, good.
Not the Cobra 2 is an American expat. I don't know if he's an American expat, but he's living in Canada with his Canadian wife. But we're all English-speaking.
Well, that's debatable.
Looks like I just walked into that one.
Yeah, British English is the only true English.
Is that why it's changed so recently? I think RP has only been around for, 100 years or so?
What's RP?
The received pronunciation, the standard accent of English, the standard accent of standard English in the United Kingdom.
Oh, I don't think there is any standard. There's so many dialects, and it's much more interesting. Try and listen to people in a different place in, you know, southern, deep south, or up north in England, and it can be difficult to understand them.
Neither than that.
You know, we have the same problem here.
What was that? I didn't understand you.
Well, that Americans can't understand people from the deep south or up north.
Yeah, I have a friend who married a woman whose family lives in Kentucky and Tennessee, and She's not too hard to understand, but we've joked about if we ever head down south, we're going to have to take her with us because she speaks southern.
Oh, we've got Thistleweb in the room, have you seen? Hello, Thistleweb.
Good evening, all.
We were just talking about difference of accents in English. And now it's all different.
Acting in English?
No, different accents in English and versions of English.
And here I've arrived to add a little more variety to the offering.
I guess so, yeah.
That's good. I mean, it's, you know, the joke is always that English is, you know, America and the UK is two countries separated by the same language.
Yeah, it's interesting. Mike Ray emailed me back to say he tried that Alt-S that Jonathan suggested, and he's still finding Mumble inaccessible. But I guess he's on Windows because he couldn't get it installed under Debian. For lack of dependencies, which is strange since I've got it under Debian, but it's Crunchbang. So maybe count one up for Crunchbang. And welcome, Ken Fallon, and this whole disaster that you predicted.
I don't think it's a disaster. Everything seems okay.
Give it time. Give it time.
Oh, Thistleweb's here. I see what you mean.
Yeah, well, in fairness, I haven't started drinking yet. I'm still on the coffee.
That's probably a good thing.
Yeah, I had to stop coffee before I started vibrating, and Ken, you're a little low.
You can tell his mood.
Yeah, I need
just
to get myself set up now.
All right, I'm going to break for lunch, or at least grab something to eat, so I'm going to walk away from the keyboard for a bit. Somebody else keep up with the notes?
Good job on the notes, Brom. Well done. So how's everyone been? How's
okay,
it gone
yeah.
so far? 50, how's it gone so far? Everything okay?
Well, I'm trying. I don't know if I understood you correctly in the email. That whole first section was on my PC. I cannot be understood. For what it's worth, I was recording on the PC the first 3 hours, and I've got it edited and I leveled and compressed the heck out of it. So I haven't listened whole thing, but I can see where I am and listen to those parts, and you can at least hear me in those parts. So I've exported to AUG. I'm about to send it to the FTP server, so you can take a listen.
The other one's already posted.
Okay, well, you know, I thought you might want to look at it and see if there's if there's anything you can do with it, because, you know, I was half the conversation for a good part of that time. It would be, you know.
Yeah, then people can turn up the volume.
Okay, so you can't hear me in there?
Yeah, I could.
Okay, I'd been given to understand that, you know, you couldn't understand me. But I guess if everybody on the show, you know, I was talking to, seem to be able to understand me. I wish they'd told me to raise the volume up a little bit beforehand, but...
Well, look, as with everything on HBR, any audio is better than no audio. That's the way we're working, so it is what it is. It's released, so people who are there tomorrow will get it. If there's any issues with that, then, yeah, we'll hear.
Well, it's to maintain mine as a backup. If anybody complains and says, oh, I just can't hear it, then we can maybe throw that at them.
I think you have enough already to be doing to be right now than to be editing audios. So, yeah, fine, fair enough. If somebody complains enough, we can send them the raw files and let them have a go at it. There's plenty to be doing.
Yeah, and one thing we forgot, if you've been following IRC, we forgot to ask to have extra slots on the HPR server, so we're limited to 20. So,
Okay.
And I think it's too late to do anything about it.
Does it require a server restart?
No, but he's got it on a virtual server, and I think he has to notify his service ahead of his provider ahead of time.
Okay, that's a problem, perhaps. Does that go for everybody, or just people in per room, or is it per the entire thing?
The entire thing, though I can't imagine anybody else is going to jump in and try to do a podcast today. But yeah, I think it's a limit on connections to the server. nothing to do with Mumble.
Okay, that's a bummer.
Well, that's why I dropped out my recording. I figured it was redundant. You know, depending on how many people are, I'd signed up for slots in the late afternoon and evening. You know, I'm going to want to record, and I found out this laptop, it's hard, you know, I can't rely on it to record, though I don't know. I was dropping DNS in and out, which is an issue on itself, during that whole time I was recording, and I got the whole thing, so.
Okay, fair enough. It is what it is. We cut according to our material. Now I need to find out where Push to Talk is on Mumble. Also, the Kevin Wishers stream, I took it out of the list this morning because it was running, but there was no audio coming through from me. And I forgot to, I did say it on IRC, but I forgot to mention it to, I forgot to send an email to Kevin, so apologies to Kevin for that. I was for some reason awake last night and only had 3 hours sleep and then had to go into work early, so. You'll have that sort of thing.
Ken, you're probably the one to ask, is there any easy way to record the stream? I did a little look, poking around last night on Record Icecast and didn't have time to finish up. But I mean, I could record that way without taking a slot in the room.
Well, we have the HPR streamer bot recording. That's where I'm getting it from. And that's the one that's sending it out to Icecast. And then I can also record it on Dark Ice, which takes it from... Are you hearing all these explosions, or is it just me?
I'm hearing
crash in the background.
Yeah, it's fireworks. It'll go crazy. Anyway, so the HPR Streamer Bot, which is a client on the VNC session, that's sending it via a Pulse Audio sync out to... Dark Ice, which has the option to record, and then send us to Icecast, which also has the option to record. But I didn't want to... I just recorded it on the Mumble client because there's a Mumble client going and it's, you know, easy peasy lemon squeezy to press the red button there and it just records it there as, you know, down, mixed down. And you don't need to restart. If I wanted to take a copy of the stream, which I'll be doing now at the next break, I just stop the recorder and then start, and it starts another one with the date and time in, and that just makes it really nice and easy.
Okay, I'm an idiot. VLC will record.
Yep, and if you have MPlayer, it'll also record, or FFmpeg, or any of those. Just take the stream down. But then again, if you're taking the HPR streamer bot one, you're in that chain. Whereas it might be an idea to also take the Kevin Wisher one. I don't know if what's Kevin's bot called? Zed Record Bot. So if you took the second stream, the Zed Record Bot as well, that would also work. You know, that'd be more important because if there was any dodginess coming through in the HPR streamer bot one, then you would, we'd have the option to fall back to the Zed Record Bot. But I think there's enough recordings going on at the minute from Mumble, so yeah, let's keep our fingers crossed.
Okay, and in Oddcast Planet, Kevin Wisher says that he did contact Jay Neustetter a month ago about increasing the slots on the server. So I guess one of us did think about it. Not to put John on the spot, because, you know, just providing the server, he's doing a great service for us. But anybody can forget something.
Exactly, yeah. What is a convenient... I have a external USB numpad thing, and I thought, hey, that would be an excellent one to get a push-to-talk button. But it's now sending asterisks across the screen.
It's a cry for help from that poor little device.
True, true. What's a good push-to-talk key?
I use the menu button on the right-hand side of the spacebar. No, that's the little alt button on the other side of the spacebar.
I always use left control.
And menu pops up a menu in KDE. It's just less than convenient.
The only two buttons
Sorry, the only two buttons that I've actually mapped to anything is I've got they're both right next to each other. One is the play and pause for Audacious, which is the menu key on the right-hand side of the space bar. And then the one in between that, the Alt-GR, is the push to talk and mumble. And other than that, everything's standard for me.
Okay, I'm trying the Alt-GR. That seems to be okay. Alt-GR. Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. Seems to be happy with that.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's finding a key that you don't actually use for anything else. And it doesn't seem to do anything.
I was using the cap locks key. I would disable caps locks key and then use it, but now the way I'm disabling caps lock is within KDE, and I completely disabled it. So that's a bit of a bummer.
I've done the number 5 this time, and I'm thinking okay, but if I'm going to put 2015 it later, then I'm going to be recording, but otherwise it's probably okay.
I was going to say, that's mighty impressive. Most of us can only do a number 1 and 2, you can do a number 5. I'd like to know what that is, I'm curious.
God, bring it down, bring it into the mud, why don't you?
It was a joke! I'll tell you what, I've got another wee. I had a thought the other day that I thought I was going to bring up here. So it might turn into a discussion, it might not, I don't know. I thought the other day about sayings that more and more people, as time passes, have no clue where they originated from, but yet they still use these sayings. So the example. Well, what I thought about was the saying of, oh, you're like a broken record or like a stuck record. And I'm thinking, well, I know what that was because when I started listening to music, I was buying LPs. I know what that is, but if you're saying that to someone in the current generation, they associate music with MP3s, the downloads. And like, what's a record? What's it meant to do? What's the reference, basically? So it was just sort of things like that. Everyday things that technology has advanced, and you know, a lot of more and more people don't know the origin of it.
Yeah, I see your point there, and there's a lot of sayings you sort of end up using, and then you think, well, why am I using that saying? Where did that come from?
Well, it's not just sayings as well, it's images that are associated with things. I saw something, I think it was last year, that the images on icons were designed in an era without the internet, so you're looking at things that are completely irrelevant now, but the icon is stuck. That's what people expect it to be, even though it doesn't represent anything.
Like the floppy disk save button thing?
Yeah, I think that was the one, yeah. And the other one as well was, when you think of like Hollywood imagery for movies and films, the kind of universal, not the company, but sort of universal standard of films and TV is the great big camera with the two reel-to-reel tape things. I mean, if you say that now, I mean, for when I was growing up, it was still tapes, but they were encased in a VHS case. You could see it was tape, but it was effectively, it looked like a book, and you put it in the machine and it played. Now, again, this generation is, the camera isn't a tape, the playback isn't a tape, it's just a button on a screen that's a digital thing, it's a chip, it's memory, it's not reel to reel, but the imagery that people expect of movies is this big camera, you know, in the film.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, also in real life, you know, anybody from our generation, if you're pantomiming for someone to call you, you know, you're across the room and you don't want to shout at them. You put one hand up to your ear and then you squirrel your finger in the air. And, you know, kids today would probably look at you like you're nuts.
Yeah, it kind of got me wondering just how much of that actually is. And it's things like, I was trying to think back to any sayings that I grew up with that were already out of date, that they were in date during my parents' generation or my grandparents' generation. But they were irrelevant to me because technology had moved on. And
dialing a number.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, we're still dialed, but yeah, I guess.
No, you hit the keypad, you didn't dial it around, as in you didn't do it around.
Oh, true enough, yeah, true enough.
Hey,
well, that's what I just said. You know, if you did that to, if you pantomime that to your kids, would they know what they were what you were talking about?
I put an old saying in the chat. I give a special prize to anybody who knows what that is without searching on the web.
Shouldn't you say the thing out for the podcast as well, though?
Oh, I could. 1 inch below is worth 2 above. Now, maybe it doesn't really matter what it means, but I think that basically we're all kind of stuck in the time period of the technology that we grew up with, and I think, like Thistleweb is saying, we all forget that probably 50 years before us there was a bunch of technology, and it gets replaced and surpassed by what we think is better, or might be better, I don't know, but these sayings will all change and get replaced, I guess.
Yeah, I never heard that saying.
Does it have something to do with, like, being buried or something?
No, but it's something to do with the ground, which...
I'm not quite sure how you can be buried 2 inches above the ground. I'm not quite sure how that would be better than 1 inch below. I don't have the imagination for that.
Well, my thinking was, you know, it's better to be 2 inches above the ground and alive than 1 inch below the ground and dead. That was my train of thought.
Well, fair enough. I'm also curious how you can go 2 inches above the ground unless you're some sort of a spirit.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. Are you in the habit of floating 2 inches above the ground, Pegwall?
Yes, I'm actually a poltergeist.
Yeah, no mirrors in your house, eh?
A poltergeist?
Yeah, he comes around at night, moving chickens around.
Just scream at children, throw chickens at them.
That sounds like a part-time job for Santa and the 364 days of the year that he's not doing anything.
You just see the Hitchcock movie. Me, me, wah, 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 wah. All right, I'm stopping now.
Well, we were talking about the older generation and technology. I am probably just young enough to be, you know, of course I learned to drive on a stick shift, but there's plenty of people my age, you know, never driven anything but an automatic. Now, anybody in my parents' time, they, you know, if you didn't drive a stick shift, you wouldn't be able to drive. And then my grandfather, my dad always told me he was a terrible driver, but I mean, he was, you know, middle-aged before there was such a thing as cars for the middle class, you know. A couple times he ran into people on intersections just because they ran into him because he wasn't not in the habit of looking both directions as he crossed, you know. When he was a young man, he rode a horse. Well, in fact, for that matter, you know, my dad was old enough that they still did things on the farm, some things on the farm with horses. Like pull wagons and stuff rather than having big trucks. So, you know, yeah, in just 3 generations, I mean, incredible changes in technology. I mean, when my grandfather was young, there were no, I guess you might have had the first little runabout cars, but probably not. And, you know, certainly no airplane. And look at what we have today. We've been in space and I'm sure when we're all, you know, in our dotterage, and, you know, there'll just be, you know, another whole generation of technology that'll blow our minds.
Oh, Ubuntu phone users, yeah. And Jola tablet users as well.
Zeb, is that a shot at Popey who was in here that, you know... We're not going to get a Ubuntu phone till we're all old men?
No, not quite. I think it's actually coming out next February, like it's rumored to. Well, apparently it's coming out in the second week of February.
I thought we heard that last year.
I see what you did there, the assumption that we're going to get an Ubuntu phone at some time, and then you're going to put a date on it.
Well, they had a date on the OMG Ubuntu site in a blog post now. Or like a second week in February, apparently.
Yeah, I think Canonical have set themselves a pattern, and I think until they actually manage to get out of that pattern, I think there's every right to just treat any promises of devices with just, well, I'm not interested, don't give me the PR stuff, just release it. Tell me when it's available, or don't tell me when it will be available, release it and then tell me it's available.
Dude man, can you tell people what the 1 inch above 2 inch thing is?
He's gone.
I was just going to say something to the dude, man. It looks like he's gone.
That's typical. Just leave us hanging.
Good. Well, he posted it into the IRC, so somebody wants to read it from there. So I'll read it for you. It's connected with cutting hay. When you are using a scythe, which is really advanced technology and basically led to a massive dependence on grain consumption, believe it or not, okay, personal opinions there. But when cutting grass for hay for the winter feed, cutting lower at the bottom by 1 inch give bigger returns to your effort and quality than have the grass 2 inches taller. Okay. Fair enough.
I think I'll wait for the sequel. There's got to be some sort of twist at the end of that.
I wouldn't say that a scythe was really advanced technology. It's basically a big blade.
Yeah, that's true. But in fairness, Death rocks his scythe in this world. He really does. He knows how to rock a scythe.
He does. He does. Although, one of my favourite characters actually is Death.
I think one of the best, well, one of my favourite characters is Otto Shriek, the vampire iconographer for the Times.
Yes, cool. Why four?
Why? Oh, a number of reasons. One, he's the guy that's, every time there's a bright flash, he turns to dust, but that's his job, so he's got to get the salamander ready to give the flash. And then quickly, as soon as a flash goes off, he's like, ow, dive underneath something to avoid being dumped to dust. And he's got a little note in his suit pocket, along with a vial of blood, that's like, please pour a drop onto the dust. Thank you. He does that, and he appears again. That, and he's part of the Temperance League as well. So that when he sees like a virgin walking past, he's like rubbing his temperance badge to get the cravings down.
Very good. I love Terry Pratchett's books. They're brilliant.
Yeah, he's one of the kind of the writers that he uses archetypes and stereotypes in such an incredible way. But the characters know what the stereotypes are, but they play on them. It's like that's what they're expected to be. I remember one of them where it was a vampire was complaining that on his day off he had to go buy wood to build a crypt. He doesn't want a crypt. His wife doesn't want a crypt. But the way his wife sees it is, well, what kind of vampire can we be if we don't have a crypt? What will the neighbours say?
I love those pair. He was accidentally bitten or something by mistake, and she... It brought her higher in society because vampires were upper class. Very funny.
Yeah, there's so many little I love Discworld, I really do.
Dave Morris has already done the show notes for the community news. You'll all be thrilled to hear. I especially am thrilled to hear.
You know, see when you're watching. Sorry, Ken, how you go?
No, I just pasted them into the thingy, so in 5 minutes we'll be switching time zones, and then that's kind of when the HBR community news for December starts. So I'll go get myself together here on this side, and then we can review the... we can do the HBR community news show as we go along. Yeah, sound like a plan? And by the way, I think we missed a time zone there somewhere.
Well, I think I got ahead of myself somewhere.
Oh, cool! You're more advanced. So we're in the Myanmar, Koko Islands, Yangon, Naypyidaw. Why am I even trying to pronounce these? I do apologize to everybody from these countries.
Happy New Year to them.
Yeah, yes, indeed. I'll be back in 5. Yep.
You know, sometimes when you watch a TV show or you watch a movie or something, and it's not immediately dated, but technology dates it. I remember watching, I think it was Mission Impossible 1, and the hacker guy, the hacker character, says, right, we'll get you the very best of gear. What do you need for this job? And he's like drooling over this, I think the Pentium 2 or something like that. And you know, drooling over it, it's like really top-end technology. It's a Pentium 2. You know, and it's like, what kind of RAM? Oh, it's like 64 mega RAM or something like that. It's something pathetic now, and it really dates it. But the rest of the show doesn't really feel that dated. It's the technology that dates it.
Yeah, it can be.
I always figured it was the haircuts that date it.
Well, Maybe some of them they're not that bad, to be honest. In terms of haircut and fashion, it doesn't change that much. But technology is something that really jumps out at me, and things like being able to do something in a storyline that you just wouldn't believe now because of mobile phones. It's like, for example, watching detectives where they can't be contacted out on the beat because there's no mobile phones. And they have to go to a phone box or something like that to call in to get an update or something. Or, you know, it's just things like that that just couldn't happen now. It just changes the dynamic now in a storyline.
Well, I mean, and I assume it's part of history. You know, Pearl Harbor, they saw the planes coming in on radar, but they, you know, such new technology, the guy told them to ignore it. They thought it was a flight of B-17s coming in, where if they checked where the heading and all that, they would have known something was up. But when they first put the radar sight in, you know, they show in the movie Tora, Tora, Tora. So, well, what are we supposed to do if we see anything? We don't have any phone to call anybody. And the guy tells them, well, there's a gas station a mile down the road. You know, run down there. Surely they've got a phone.
Yeah, strange oversight when you think about it. But again, hindsight's a wonderful thing. It's things as well, like when you see characters having to scam others to get information or whatever. And it's like they pretend to be this movie director and they've done these various movies and they're trying to do that. And nowadays, all it would take was the other person to get on their smartphone and go into IMDb and look them up. It's like, hey, you don't exist, pal. You know? And before that technology was available, you only had their word for it. Even things like getting into arguments about whatever, you know, average useless trivia about who was number one at what time and how many albums.
That's what the Guinness Book of World Records is for.
Yeah, I know. But what I'm talking about is if you're in a random conversation, if you're in a random conversation with someone down the pub and that comes up, before you'd be constantly back and forth. No, it was this. No, I'm sure it was this. No, I'm telling you it was this. I know. No, it was this. Now you've got the internet in your hands. You can just pull out your phone and check it. And you say, ah, see, proof, there you go.
You know, the Guinness Book of World Records was produced by the Guinness Beer Company because so many bar fights were coming of people arguing over something, so they set put a Book of World Records together.
Is that really true?
Honest, true.
Yeah, that's true.
And a happy new year to the just jumped into another time zone.
So, your feedback. We are welcoming Bangladesh and some regions of Russia. Anyone want to pronounce those? Anybody?
I've been doing it all day, Ken. It's your turn.
No. You know what I do. I traditionally butcher people's names. Come on, help me out here. Dakata.
Right, tell you what, I'll have a go if you like, based on the mumble. It's probably going to be terrible, but I'm sober.
I was thinking you should do it, Fessel Webb, but so go ahead.
Right.
There you go.
Right, so we have Dhaka, Almaty, Bishkek, and Triumfu. How's that?
Perfect. Alrighty, welcome everybody to... Oh, hold on one second, I want to stop and restart the streams. Just
Happy New Year to those countries as well.
Yeah, just give me one second here. I need to connect to the VPS. Because this will be the end of one part of the second part of the HBR show. Tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of Hacker Public Radio.
I say we make that the new Hacker Public Radio theme. So every episode ends with this web going do 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 do.
Okay, one moment.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link
to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.